It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. At least I haven't burnt the popcorn yet. Popcorn's been good all day. I kid. Hey, here we are on the ninth day of February 2021, and the opening of Trump's second impeachment trial just happens to fall on a... Well, maybe this is the last, really the last, Trump Panic Tuesday here on the Horn. My God, I... Huh. Some bad lawyering going on out there, folks. I mean, bad lawyering. Hi, I'm Robin, and I got a feeling this is going to be a merry little evening. The trial is, the arguments, if you can call them that, are still continuing apace. Maybe, just maybe, it might be a nice idea to, let me see what Sparky thinks about it, call in the open up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening. I don't know. I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of people wanting to talk about a lot of stuff. Might be a good idea. So we'll give that some thought in the coming hour. But, as usual, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. As a matter of fact, we send out thanks to our ninth day of the month subscribers. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to Cecilia. And thank you to Mary Bell. Thank you, Libby. Thank you, James. Thank you, Khalil. Thank you, Ralphs. And thank you very kindly to Jessica. Thank you all so much for being partial sponsors of the program. It's how we keep this all going. As you can tell, I'm not late to the microphone. My appointment concluded in ample time for me to get back here so that we could all watch the remaining madness together. You know, and by the way, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place when this program is live, five nights a week for 3 hours between 5 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 2 and 5 Pacific Standard Time, head on over to headon.live, click on the chat room tab, and pick out a screen name and a password, and you will be mightily welcomed by early arrivers Otto and Squeaky. Roger said he might be late this evening because he's attending a tomato canning class, and I would like to pick his brain on that when the opportunity arises. But all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has in fact folded space to become Man Cave, and says it's a lovely day out in Northern California where Sparky is. All the 65 degrees. It's not unbearable in here right now. The temperatures got into the low 40s. We've got a winter storm watch on for tomorrow and Thursday and Friday, and I think that probably means I've got to go for kerosene after the program. Oh, Jesus. In here, it's not so bad in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. We've got all of 60 degrees, and that's downright bearable for the likes of me. But we will see. We'll see where the conversation takes us. As this impeachment trial opens, of course, today was the constitutional arguments in advance of everything else. And I mean, honest to God, I wouldn't trust Bruce Castor or David Schoen to pursue a red car, blue car rear ender with no questions of liability. Jesus God, these guys are bad. Bruce Castor is a racist. And as proven by his attempt to scare the white Senate with the scary, scary black people from last summer. And David Schoen, well, look, David Schoen, who is or was when I went to air, still speaking, it looks like they've gone into some sort of recess or something. Is that what's going on? Just call up the audio real quick.
Mr. Kelly.
Voting on the resolution. Yes. That'll go on for a little bit. Is it constitutional to try a former president? Yes, 24, no, 23. So far, 25 to 23. We know how this is going to end. But, and by the way, the fundraising goal for the evening is 500 bucks. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to Cecilia and Jessica. Thank you very much indeed. Let's see here. Fancy lawyering. Matt in San Francisco says, after hearing 45's lawyers today, I think I can safely say they are worth the money that Trump is not going to pay them. Talk about rambling nonsense. I hope the desk is padded because I foresee much pounding in the days ahead. Well, that's the thing, Matt. What this all was today was table pounding. Remember, when you've got the law, pound on the law. When you've got the facts, pound on the facts. And when you don't have either, pound on the table. And, you know, Castor and Schoen did everything but take their shoe off and beat on the podium. It was bad. And Castor was just unbearably awful, comically awful. Roger in Oregon, when he said he wouldn't be in chat for a little bit, said, it's a good thing I'm not a judge in this debate. I judged a lot of debate when I was in college. I would toss these assholes for not even addressing the debate topic. I just wish I could hear the Dems ripping them a new asshole for their flawed logic in this opening statement. First claiming that this is a legal process. It's not. It's a political process. And therefore, the rules of evidence, etc., simply don't apply. How this fucker ever got a law degree is beyond me. Anyway, have fun this afternoon, folks. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Roger. If you listen to the podcast, you'll note that I'm absolutely in agreement with you. I mean, there's some bad lawyers out there. And, you know, bad lawyers handling hard cases can often make good lawyers handling hard cases can often make a good lawyer seem like a bad lawyer. And while Bruce Castor Oil did seem like he was a bit at sea, David Schoen, whom we may refer to for the remainder of the program and the remainder of the trial, as far as I'm concerned, simply as Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer. Yep, remember, the guy who is credibly accused of more than 24 sexual assaults and sexual abuses of women, yeah, that guy hired Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer. Because that's what you want in this. No. But he did. He did. And he has proven himself to be real creepy. Real creepy. We're up to 55, 56 to 41. Is it constitutional to try a former president? Yes, 56. No, 42. Oh, for God's sake. So then what do you do? You can't try. You can't impeach. You can't try it. Oh, Jesus. One of the things that struck me early on is, as I was listening to the legalistic rambling stylings of Bruce Castor Oil, was that dude was either being deliberately obfuscatory or he really, really doesn't understand what it is he's doing. And what I mean in saying that is that he kept arguing that they were hearing impeachment in the Senate. No. The little orange prick's already been impeached for the second time. and he is being tried for a second time. I mean, at this point in time, honest to God, Trump could have done better by hiring the unfrozen caveman lawyer from the 90s SNL. What do I know? I'm just an unfrozen caveman lawyer. Jesus. Well, and let's see the results. Or hear them.
On this vote, the ayes are 56, the nays are 44. And pursuant to S.R.S. 47, the Senate having voted in the affirmative on the foregoing question, the Senate shall proceed with the trial as provided under the provisions of that resolution.
Mr. President.
Majority Leader.
I ask unanimous consent that the trial adjourn until 12 noon tomorrow, Wednesday, February 10th, and that this order also constitute the adjournment of the Senate.
Without objection, we shall stand in adjournment until noon tomorrow.
So that bit of pettifogging is out of the way. Now, David Schoen, look, when you have it, and I'm not being like, I'm not trying to be elitist or anything, but they do things to your brain in law school. They really, really do. But they teach you things early on because they know nobody comes into 1L with as a blank slate. We've all heard things. And one of the things that is often discussed is, well, I could never be a lawyer because I could never defend a rapist. And you learn really quickly, or else you exit law school even more so. There's never been a lawyer who has gone into court defending a rapist unless that person had already been convicted previously of rape. Let that sink in. The accused in our system of governance and in our system of so-called criminal justice is said to be innocent until proven guilty. And so a lawyer doesn't have to believe, a lawyer represents. And it is a cornerstone, and they will tell you the way that professors like to drive this home is to say, look, John Adams was the second president of the United States, right?
Right.
John Adams was one of the three men who drafted the Declaration of Independence, right?
Right.
John Adams was involved with the ratification of the Constitution. Okay? And yet, the Boston Massacre, John Adams was the one who stepped forward and said, these redcoats deserve a fair and zealous representation. And if nobody else will do it, I'll do it. And so he did. With an entire, well, not nation, but colonies, full well certain that they were guilty. I mean, everybody, the people were there. People saw it. People saw them open fire. But John Adams, nonetheless, gave them the zealous defense that the Constitution we would later ratify would demand, because it was also a part of English common law, as we were reminded today, from which our Constitution arises. Curiously, it doesn't arise from Moses. So all that bullshit, do we get our system of law from Jesus? No, no, sunshine, no, we don't. But this, with all that having been said, this sort of transcends that boundary as far as I'm concerned. Because what you have in the case of David Schoen in particular, and by the way, I don't know if we've got any serious Orthodox practicing members of the Jewish faith. I mean, I know a little, but not a lot. But was that a religious thing where every time David Schoen took a drink of water, he had to touch his head? Is that like an ultra-Orthodox thing? Because remember, this is the guy who says, well, you know, we're going to have to adjourn the trial at sundown on Friday because, you know, I'm an observant Orthodox Jew. And this is, please don't take this as anti-Semitic. It's not intended that way. I'm not. I'm simply curious because there are different traditions within the faith that require certain headgear, tassels to be tied a certain way on a shawl, their dietary rules, and all kinds of stuff. And they are arcane if you are not a practicing member of that faith. Because so before it was just one of those things. It was like a vocal tick or something. He would go to take a drink of his water and he would touch his head as if his toupee was going to fall off. But there was no toupee. I don't even think there's a yarmulke up there. And isn't that what bobby pins are for? And I said, because Agnes asked me the same question. We're watching. Why does he keep touching his head? I don't know. But that was just a distraction, I suppose. Randy in PA, pointing out, they fiddle, they diddle, a takeoff on the famed late sports commentator Johnny Most, who for a long time broadcasted for the Boston Celtics. Yeah, they fiddle, they diddle. And in the case of David Schoen and Bruce Castor, they shoot, it's a brick. Megan asking David Schoen, why did Trump hire the head of the Lollipop Gang to represent him? Oh, Jesus. Because it doesn't matter. The short answer, Megan, is it doesn't matter. They're doing it again. I remember roughly this time last year when we were watching the trial of Donald Trump for the first time through, and we talked about the fact that one of these assholes was going to get up and give the famous Johnny Cochran Chewbacca defense from South Park. Chewbacca's a Wookiee. What's he doing on Endor with all the Ewoks? Don't make no sense. And that's pretty much the Chewbacca defense. And that's what we've had all day long. But tucked away in the midst of it all, something more than a something, David Schoen threatened the members of the Senate, and for all intents and purposes, threatened the House, and threatened you, and threatened me. This was as big a dog whistle as I've lately heard, and it's chilling insofar as we already have intel, we have knowledge, that some of these godforsaken goobers, these bloodthirsty monsters, these anti-democracy mongrels, these maggots, these Trumpanzee, this white trash scum that attacked our country on January 6th, they're planning to do it again. And they're planning it for not long from now. At present, the idea that the notion that they have, some of them, that they're babbling about and their 4chans and their 8chans and their Reddit groups and whatnot, is that they're going to do it again on March the 4th. And that is all of 5 days away. And so during his argument, if one may dare call it that, he said, this trial will tear this country apart, perhaps like we've only seen once before in our history. He was alluding, of course, to the Civil War. Now, unlike Dr. Bill, I don't hold a PhD in history. But it is one of those things that I love, one of those intellectual topics that I love more than I love a lot of others. And so for starters, David Schoen is fucking wrong. We've seen this violence before. Yes, we saw it in 1861 when a bunch of slavers committed treason against the United States of America. But after the Declaration of Independence, but before the Constitution was ratified, and after, we saw horrible political violence, bloody political violence, hateful political violence. And we saw it in places like Philadelphia, and New York, and Boston. And there are families in Canada to this day whose ancestors actually date back to lives and homes in places like Philadelphia and New York and Boston, Savannah and Charleston and Wilmington. Because there was political violence that related to people that was directed at people who were still supportive of the crown during and after the revolution. So he kind of missed me with all of that. I don't appreciate people who either unwittingly or wittingly otherwise obscure our history, however bloody it might be. This trial, he threatened us, David Schoen did, will tear this country apart, perhaps like we've only seen once before in our history. In other words, if we go forward with this trial of a man who incited an attack on the Constitution of the United States, David Schoen told us that the maggots will attack again. Was that a dog whistle? If it was, it was a foghorn. Was it a threat? Was it a promise? Chris Hayes described what David Schoen presented today as simply despicable. Because it was. How dare he? And, of course, he also babbled about the disenfranchisement of 74 million maggots. They weren't disenfranchised. They exercised the fucking franchise. F-bombs this early. God. They exercised the franchise. They went. They voted. They grunted. They hooted. They barked. They yawped. They showed up on January the 6th in Washington, D.C., butthole to belly button and belly button to butthole. And they LARPed and smollocked and gravelated all over each other, lollygagging all over the place. And, of course, the House managers showed that to the Senate. And this, of course, also gave the legal team a sad. Castor and Schoen accused the House managers of paying a Hollywood movie firm. Well, babies, it was not a movie. It was not fiction. What was played today in the House of Representatives was a damn documentary. It was a news piece. It was an attempt to make the maggots who are sitting there and don't care what kind of defense is put forward, because they are still going to bow the knee of fealty to Donald Trump and vote to acquit him. Doesn't matter. They could have gotten up there and read The Wreck of the Hesperus. We did get some bad poetry rendition from David Schoen. But they could have read The Wreck of the Hesperus. Curfew must not ring tonight. They could have read the an old Manhattan phone book. They could have read Jabberwocky. It would not have mattered, because the case has been prejudged again by these godforsaken Republicans. That's all. That's all. Steve in New York observes, Trump's lawyers, instead of pounding on the table, sound like they might have been smoking a pound of weed. I know. Here's the point, Lee in New York adds. Because this is not a court of law and there is no judge in charge of the proceedings, the Trump lawyers can lie as frequently as Trump does. So true. So true. And Stephen New York, Trump's lawyers, that was Grandpa Simpson-level rambling on the part of Bruce Castor, it was. And by way of explanation or excuse, he said, well, you know, the House managers did such a good job, we changed up what we were going to say today, and really, I was driving along, and I was expecting to hear the opening lines, you know, maybe not the Wreck of the Hesperus. How about the cremation of Sam McGee? There's never a bad time for a little RW service. Strange tales are told. Yeah. I don't know what it was that made me think of the Wreck of the Hesperus. Oh, what a lovely piece of doggerel. It used to be a beloved Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea. The skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom white as the hawthorn buds that ope in the month of May. Really, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow? A little girl? The skipper, he stood beside the helm. His pipe was in his mouth. Well, no, I think David Schoen probably wouldn't do The Wreck of the Hesperus, because it might get the senators to thinking about how he represented Jeffrey Epstein, and the little daughter on The Wreck of the Hesperus would have been, here, let me get you off the boat. No, let's take you to Jeffrey's house. Let's stick with the cremation of Sam McGee instead, shall we? So much more enjoyable. There's strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night on the marge of Lake Lebarge I cremated Sam McGee. I think I would have enjoyed that a hell of a lot more. These guys are terrible. Threatening civil war, no shit. That takes some chutzpah, doesn't it? But he really, really did it. Absolutely, he did it. Here's the actual clip.
We have to have this impeachment trial, such as it is, to bring about unity. But they don't want unity. And they know this so-called trial will tear the country in half, leaving tens of millions of Americans feeling left out of the nation's agenda, as dictated by one political party that now holds the power in the White House and in our national legislature. But they're proud Americans who never quit getting back up when they're down, and they don't take dictates from another party based on partisan force-feeding. This trial will tear this country apart, perhaps like we have only seen once before in our history.
There you have it. Yeah, they don't take orders from another political party. In other words, they only have any reverence for the Constitution if somebody on their side of the aisle is wielding power. Jesus. Darlene with an observation. Manchin voted aye on the question, is it constitutional to try a former president? Bishop Willard Romney and Ben Sasse, that new and different kind of Republican, voted aye. Toomey voted aye. Darlene points out, I did not hear Susan Collins, unfortunately. But there were six of them. Toomey, Sasse, Romney, three others. But, you know, there was a vote before that, and that was the vote on whether to just accept the rules of how this was going to go down. Mitch McConnell was a co-sponsor of it. And yet there's noted constitutional scholar from Utah, Mike Lee, voting no. And, of course, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, he had to get his nose in the brown and stinky with Trump. There went dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And he voted no, that he didn't like the rules. How are you supposed to get anything done with people like that in the Senate? But, yeah, you're right. Steve and Georgia Stan is right. Earlier, when Bruce Castor was babbling on, Steve and Brother Bishop Steve noted, Trump's defense lawyer is a bumbling idiot. Where the hell did they find this stooge? This is difficult to watch. What's really sad to me is these clowns could have gotten up there, not said a word, simply danced the curly shuffle, and these Republican assholes would still vote to acquit. Precisely. The defense in this is just a dumb show because it's not a real trial. Because the conclusion is already known. It is, in a word, foregone. And nothing. And this is what makes the perfidy of these Senate Republicans so sickening, so infuriating. Nothing. Nothing. If they brought in the beaten, bludgeoned body of the Capitol Police officer that one of Donald Trump's supporters or a mob of them bludgeoned to death with a fire extinguisher and sat him in front of the Republicans, they would still vote to acquit Donald Trump because there's some un-American trash. Let's just say it plain as it can be. They are un-American trash. And I'm not trying to be ugly about it, but I don't know how else to describe it. So, Sparky, let me know your thoughts. You wanna do a front porch this evening? Send me a message in Skype or whatever. I'll be sitting right here. I'll see it when it comes in. And of course, Wilsons Are Wild, Part 1. Robin! I woke up this morning and heard of two deaths that shook me up, and frankly, I've been crying all morning, Joey notes. Jeffrey woke me and told me that Mary Wilson of the Supremes had passed at age 76 and Marty Schottenheimer at 77. Of course, Jeffrey still enjoys the high, soulful sounds of the Supremes, and so did my great-grandmother. Yes, my great-grandmother really liked Diana Ross, and great-grandma Lily, being from Sheffield, England, really loved English natives, Tom Jones and Petula Clark, both of whom sang on her favorite program, The Lawrence Welk Show. Wow, Petula Clark was on Lawrence Welk? Son of a gun. To this day, I can remember my great-grandmother humming the tune, Downtown, Petula Clark's huge hit in 1964. Great-grandma wasn't too sure about the Beatles, because the Beatles debuted on the Ed Sullivan Show this week back in 64, but she did like Elton John's Daniel and Your Song. Well, you know, Jeffrey's not going to leave any of that laying around. He warns, Joey, if you don't get to the point soon, the horn audience is going to have a... Wait for it. The horn audience is going to have a grandma seizure. Wow, we went a long way for that one. Okay, more on Lily later. Yes, Joey continues, I was saddened to see that Marty Schottenheimer had passed away because he was only a year younger than Richard, the man I'm currently caring for, and frankly will soon be going into the light just as Marty did last night. Well, nobody's ever going to accuse Jeffrey of being awash in tact. Did I hear you say Frank Wilson? No, Jeffrey, what I meant to convey was that my friend Richard frankly will soon be seeing the light, as hospice has been called, and his days are few. And Jeffrey says, I am so sadly aware of Richard's situation as I've grown to love the old man, even though when you first brought me to his condo, he told you to get rid of that fucking giraffe. Yeah, you'll have that. Some people just don't love giraffes. However, I really thought you said Frank Wilson because Frank Wilson was big in the Berry Gordy Motown scene and wrote songs for the Supremes. Ironically, as you were speaking with Flavio last night, you mentioned people dying of lung cancer that had never smoked in their lives. Well, Richard's brother-in-law, who was a doctor, fell into that category as he died at a very young age due to lung cancer and never was a smoker. Also, per Flavio's conversation, I've been taking care of Richard's bills, and literally the damn energy bill arrived yesterday on the day it was due. Richard was a big fan of Marty Schottenheimer, who was a native of Canonsburg, PA, I knew it well, and coached in Cleveland 35 years ago. Schottenheimer led the Browns to the AFC Championship game 3 out of 4 years in the late 80s, only to lose to John Elway and the Broncos each time. Richard attended many games at the old Cleveland Stadium dating back to the 60s. On our trips down to the casino in Washington, PA, we would pass Canonsburg, PA, and from Interstate 79, you have a great view of the small town halfway between Pittsburgh and Washington, PA. Oh, I know that view well. Richard was by no means senile, but as a joke, he would always ask me if he'd ever told the story about Marty Schottenheimer's high school career. He must have said that nearly 200 times, is that how many trips we made to PA over the last 7 years. Well, we'll let Jeffrey tell the story. As the legend goes, as a freshman in high school, the very cerebral and academically gifted Marty Schottenheimer played the trombone in the marching band. When one of the football coaches saw how big, strong, and agile he appeared to be, the coach insisted Marty play linebacker and not the trombone. The rest was history, as the scholarly Schottenheimer was given a full ride to the University of Pittsburgh, where he performed well enough to be drafted by the old AFL Buffalo Bills, with the owner of that team being none other than Columbus, Ohio's very own Ralph Wilson. Goodbye, Marty Schottenheimer. You will be missed, and may the city of Canonsburg, PA, canonize you. Indeed. It's been Joey's Journal for Tuesday, the 9th day of February, with part one of Wilson's Are Wild, with Giraffe reminding us that Canonsburg, PA, was also the home of crooners Bobby Vinton and Perry Como. It's also the locale of the original Jefferson College, which was an institution of higher learning, mid-19th century. It would eventually merge with Washington College to become Washington and Jefferson. But a little cabin still stands in Canonsburg, a little log cabin. And it wasn't much in 1848 either. But six of the boys, all of whom were already Freemasons, from all over the eastern U.S., gathered together there in a great snowy white Allegheny Mountain owl would perch on their windowsill. And they agreed to form a social fraternity. And I joined that very same social fraternity in college. And so we paid several trips of homage to the little cabin because it was just such a very brief trip up I-79 from Morgantown. Yeah, Arthur says, yeah, Kincaid, is that what you want? You're tearing our country apart with your footage and evidence and reality bias. I hope you're happy. You don't deserve Trump. You're lucky he even presided for us, you bastards. You do that a little bit too well, Arthur. You really do. As to constitutionality, Stephen New York asks, who is the one who now voted it's constitutional? Was it 55-45 on whether it was constitutional from Rand Paul's motion? I don't know. It's possible. It could have been McConnell. Don't know. I'd kind of be surprised if he didn't, seeing as how he'd agreed to the rules of the process. Not entirely sure. Okay, so Sparky says sure to the idea of having a front porch conversation this evening. I thought that folks tuning in live might like to get into the conversation, into a group discussion. And a little reminder, of course. Oops. I got too much crap around here. Can't wait till spring and clean this place out. But a reminder that when we do start the front porch, there will also be available the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and that'll get you into the conversation. Here's a simple answer to that one. David Schoen threatening civil war if he didn't get his way. You respond to that threat from David Schoen by saying, "Well, Mommy, we do not negotiate with terrorists." Good one, Megan. Good one. But the arguments presented by the impeachment managers, particularly Jamie Raskin of Maryland, that stuff was profound. And when they did show the documentary, 9-minute documentary, it's really not amenable to play it on the program here because so much of it is visual. It's all over the internet. You can find it and watch it at your leisure. But it was chilling if you saw it. Because what it expertly did is to put in real-time context the attack on the Capitol at the same time that Nitwit Nero was uttering his treasonous and insurrectionist words. It is the stuff of nightmares. As bad as it was, it could have been so much worse. And I remain convinced that there is an element in this country that still hopes to make it worse. And that in its own right is surely terrifying. My goodness, my goodness. Jamie Raskin, who has been through so very much, wept as he made his argument. He wept for his own grief, and he wept at his grief for his country.
Personal about the stakes of this decision, whether President Trump can stand trial and be held to account for inciting insurrection against us. This trial is personal indeed for every senator, for every member of the House, every manager, all of our staff, the Capitol Police, the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police, the National Guard, maintenance and custodial crews, the print journalists and TV people who were here, and all of our families and friends. And I hope this trial reminds America how personal democracy is, and how personal is the loss of democracy, too. Distinguished members of the Senate, my youngest daughter, Tabitha, was there with me on Wednesday, January 6th. It was the day after we buried her brother, our son Tommy, the saddest day of our lives. Also, there was my son-in-law, Hank, who's married to our oldest daughter, Hannah, and I consider him a son, too, even though he eloped with my daughter and didn't tell us what they were going to do. But it was in the middle of COVID-19. But the reason they came with me that Wednesday, January 6th, was because they wanted to be together with me in the middle of a devastating week for our family. And I told them I had to go back to work because we were counting electoral votes that day on January 6th. It was our constitutional duty. And I invited them instead to come with me to witness this historic event, the peaceful transfer of power in America. And they said they heard that President Trump was calling on his followers to come to Washington to protest, and they asked me directly, would it be safe? Would it be safe? And I told them, of course it should be safe. This is the Capitol. Was a sound I will never forget, the sound of pounding on the door like a battering ram, the most haunting sound I ever heard, and I will never forget it. My chief of staff, Julie Tagan, was with Tabitha and Hank, locked and barricaded in that office, the kids hiding under the desk, placing what they thought were their final texts and whispered phone calls to say their goodbyes. They thought they were going to die. My son-in-law had never even been to the Capitol before. And when they were finally rescued over an hour later by Capitol officers and we were together, I hugged them and I apologized and I told my daughter Tabitha, who's 24 and a brilliant algebra teacher, in Teach for America. Now, I told her how sorry I was, and I promised her that it would not be like this again the next time she came back to the Capitol with me. And you know what she said? She said, Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol. Of all the terrible, brutal things I saw and I heard on that day, and since then, that one hit me the hardest. That and watching someone use an American flagpole with the flag still on it to spear and pummel one of our police officers ruthlessly, mercilessly, tortured by a pole with a flag on it that he was defending with his very life. People died that day.
Indeed they did. Not that David Schoen cares. Not that Bruce Castor cares. Not their job to care. It's their job. Well, it's their job, as it has been oh so many other lawyers, going back to Roy Cohn's job, to get Donald Trump out of a nightmare mess of his own damned making. There are so many clips from Representative Raskin. Proud to say that he was a co-sponsor in the last Congress. He was a co-sponsor of the AIC Act. Good man. But David Schoen would go on later to threaten the American people with civil war if we do not do Donald Trump's bidding. But Representative Raskin, a constitutional scholar in his own right, in the process of disassembling some of their arguments, which is what caused Bruce Castor to have to ramble. No, he talked about where the real threat lies. He didn't have to threaten civil war. He didn't have to pretend that 74 million people who voted for Trump and who simply lost the election were somehow disenfranchised. No, he knows there's a threat, and he laid it out, plain and simple.
Thank you. Then, Mr. Manager Raskin, your party may proceed first, and we'll be able to reserve rebuttal time if you wish. Mr. Raskin, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Distinguished members of the Senate, good afternoon. My name is Jamie Raskin. It's my honor to represent the people of Maryland's 8th Congressional District in the House and also to serve as the lead House manager. And Mr. President, we will indeed reserve time for rebuttal. Thank you. Because I've been a professor of constitutional law for 3 decades, I know there are a lot of people who are dreading endless lectures about the Federalist Papers here. Please breathe easy. Okay, I remember well W.H. Auden's line that a professor is someone who speaks while other people are sleeping. You will not be hearing extended lectures from me because our case is based on cold, hard facts. It's all about the facts. President Trump has sent his lawyers here today to try to stop the Senate from hearing the facts of this case. They want to call the trial over before any evidence is even introduced. Their argument is that if you commit an impeachable offense in your last few weeks in office, you do it with constitutional impunity. You get away with it. In other words, conduct that would be a high crime and misdemeanor in your first year as president, and your second year as president, and your third year as president, and for the vast majority of your fourth year as president, you can suddenly do in your last few weeks in office without facing any constitutional accountability at all. This would create a brand new January exception to the Constitution of the United States of America. A January exception. And everyone can see immediately why this is so dangerous. It's an invitation to the president to take his best shot at anything he may want to do on his way out the door, including using violent means to lock that door, to hang on to the Oval Office at all costs, and to block the peaceful transfer of power. In other words, the January exception is an invitation to our founders' worst nightmare. And if we buy this radical argument that President Trump's lawyers advance, we risk allowing January 6th to become our future. And what will that mean for America? Think about it. What will the January exception mean to future generations if you grant it? I'll show you.
And that's where we got the video that Nitwit Nero's lawyers complained so bitterly of. But you've heard these words and you know how profound they are. Do you know what Marco Rubio was doing while Jamie Raskin was talking? Marco Rubio was idly flipping through a book. Meanwhile, Richard Burr of North Carolina didn't even bother to put on socks today and was cramming his desk full of munchies that he could snack on during the proceedings. No kidding. Cynthia Loomis is a MAGOT freshman, and she sat there with no mask on for 30 freaking minutes, being a potential plague rat in a room full of really old people. Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who has dictatorial dreams of his own, he was jotting away at something. Maybe it was a spreadsheet. I don't know. And apparently the only thing that got these maggots' attention was the video montage that Jamie Raskin played. Because, of course, since it had maggots in it, it was full of vulgarities. Words that are ordinarily not allowed to be spoken in the well of the Senate on its floor, but which had to be uttered or heard uttered today in the Senate in order to provide the necessary evidence of the impeachable offense of which Donald Trump is damned well guilty. Before the proceedings started, Chris Murphy of Connecticut said, "It's not very often you have a trial at the scene of the crime. It was our chamber that was violated." Maryland's Ben Cardin said, "We were all a party to the insurrection. We experienced it firsthand. It's something that's personal to those of us who were in harm's way." On the other hand, Dr. Bill Cassidy of Louisianistan, the guy that we were talking about, just yesterday, who casually dismissed cancer clusters in his own home state, he was unmoved. "The settings in which we hold the trial do not make the events more vivid for me. They're vivid enough in and of themselves." Along the way, Representative Raskin said, This cannot be our future. Well, we need to get it through our thick heads that this is the future that tens of millions of Americans seem to want. And now, the lying, as if it ever stopped, has begun in earnest. I have two separate stories before me. One from, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball, but the other from a Michigan Republican. And both of them are eerily similar, which means that something like this, the ideas espoused are being spread in those seedy underguts of the right-wing internet. the number one Republican in the entire state of Michigan is a guy named Mike Shirky. He's the Michigan State Senate Majority Leader. And a video was posted by some probably treasonous outfit called ROAR, Reclaim Our American Republic. Having a meeting with other maggots. In that video, as he talks to his fellow maggots, he described the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol, and he said, "That wasn't Trump people. That's been a hoax from day one. It was all staged. Hell, Mitch McConnell was part of it. I think they wanted to have a mess." That is the leader of the Senate, the majority leader of the Senate in the state of Michigan, spreading an absolute, undeniable, unmistakable falsehood. But like I said, curiously enough, I mean, it's rather a long way from Michigan to Georgia or even Michigan to Washington, D.C. Yet nonetheless, Marjorie Taylor Greene Cucumber was saying the very same damn thing on Twitter.
"If the January 6th organizers were Trump supporters, then why did they attack us while we were objecting to Electoral College votes for Joe Biden? The attack ruined our objection that we spent weeks preparing for, which devastated our efforts on behalf of Trump and his voters."
Notice it wasn't on behalf of the United States of America. Yeah. It's almost like it was planned or something.
"They placed pipe bombs at the RNC and the DNC the night before. They did not just target one party. They targeted Republicans and Democrats. They were against government altogether. I was in the chamber when the attack occurred. I was very upset, scared, and terrified for all of us," even though she wouldn't put on a fucking mask. "Every person from Capitol staff, press, police, to every member R&D. But you wouldn't have your fucking staff put on a mask to keep from spreading the disease, would you? I will be forever grateful to my Republican colleagues who bravely helped the police protect us and block the door. They courageously risked their lives against the attackers trying to get in. The attack," and this, okay, this is where she begins to, the Capitol attack was planned and organized, not incited in the moment by President Trump, and no Republican member was involved. We were all victims that day. And once again, Trump is the victim of the never-ending hate-fueled witch hunt. This impeachment trial is a circus for the Democrat media mob to entertain the masses that they've brainwashed and addicted to hate so they don't see the dim policies being rapidly forced into place that are destroying our lives, stealing our freedoms, and putting America last.
Hopefully. Although there's so much going on, it's too much to hope for. But nonetheless, hopefully, somebody will see that Twitter thread. Other members of the House, perhaps, and sign on to Representative Cori Bush's resolution expelling Marjorie Taylor Greene Cuball from the House of Representatives. Devoutly to be wished. But you know how it goes. Wish in one hand, shit in the other. See which one fills up first. Am I wrong? Because I don't feel wrong. Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. So, sedition and treason are okay if you're a Republican? We're in deep shit. Facts? What are those? A liberal, socialist, fascist, communist conspiracy. Yeah, was David Stone... I missed a little bit of... Was he waving around a copy of what? The Communist Manifesto? Or was it Mao's Little Red Book? Because David Schoen did call anybody who supports this conviction a commie. I wish I was kidding. Jesus. Flavio says, no snacks or drinks are allowed during the Senate trial, according to the rules. No food or drinks except for still or sparkling water. Well, tell that to Richard Burr. Wonder if there's anything in there about socks? Todd with a question. Do we remember how it was almost impossible for DJ to commit a peaceful transfer of power like over a year ago? Is this a credible argument as to state of mind and intention? I don't think they're going to raise state of mind. I don't think they dare. They have to argue that there's something illegitimate about the process itself, because everything else is foreclosed, either by Nitwit Nero's own words or by the video and audio evidence that we can see and hear with our own lying eyes and ears. Yeah. Yeah, that's me typing. Got to get connected to the group. Oop. There, all better now. Okie doke. All right, I think we are connected now that I've filibustered an hour away. Hey, Sparky, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool, cool. So did you watch it all?
No, I didn't watch those defense clowns.
You missed it? Well, yeah. You go to the circus, you got to expect clowns.
Yeah. I got my appointment for the golden ticket.
Hot damn, I'm so happy.
But it's not till March.
Mine's not till December. So, you know, count your blessings.
March 27th, and then my second shot is in April.
Yeah, so basically you cave up and don't go anywhere till March 27th.
No, I have to go out, get my car smog next week.
They won't give you a pass for that in the pandemic?
No. But it's okay, because the office of the place I go is fairly open, and then I can go stand outside while they've smogged my car and then go back in, pay, and go.
For the ignorant hillbillies in the audience, and that would be me, what does get my car smogged mean?
It means they run a bunch of tests on your car. They stick a thing up your tailpipe, and they check a bunch of things.
Oh, it's an emissions standards testing?
Yeah. Every 2 years here. And then so that's That's like $47 or something like that. And then I got to pay my...
But gosh, it's worth it for clean air, isn't it?
Yeah. My renewal fee is $140 this year.
Ouch. Well, it was a... I was going to say it was a damned interesting day. I hope that, do you have any inkling of what we can expect tomorrow? Because now that this little bit of pettifogging is over with, we get down to the brass tacks of actually dealing with the issue at hand.
Yeah, I think we'll have Swalwell speak. And Ted Lieu. And I'm not sure of the other people's. But I think both Ted Lieu and Swalwell were prosecutors. Or Lieu was an Air Force JAG officer, I think.
But they're not members. Are they members of the management team?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes some sense. Oh, by the way, I got my question answered. Sean is, at least in theory, an observant Jew, and he has to cover his head when he takes a sip of water and quietly says a blessing. And since he isn't wearing a kippah, he has to cover his head with his hand. Okay. Well, like I said, I thought that might be the answer to the question.
Did he have to take a sip of water and put his hand on his head while he was talking?
No, well, he would stop and take a drink of water, and he'd put his hand on top of his head while he took a drink of water. And I guess he says a silent blessing or something when he does that. Go figure.
Well, I was busy doing stuff out in the man cave, and then those guys were on, too.
You know, I'm just wondering how observant one really is if one is willing to defend, you know, Donald Trump. I mean, I'm pretty, Will in Chicago isn't here, but if he was, I would lean on him for some expertise. It's got to be something in the Torah against representing Donald Trump. Maybe not. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Don't you think he was scraping the bottom of the barrel with these lawyers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The pickle barrel was bone dry, and they were scraping salt off the bottom. It's that bad.
I wonder if they observe the first rule of lawyers, get the money up front.
Sparky, if they didn't, they're never going to see a damn dime. Get the money up front. I would think so, because they also, you know, Those are the two things you hear on the first day of law school. Get the money up front. And the other one is all about if you've got the facts, pound on the facts. If you've got the law, pound on the law. If you've got neither, pound on the table. That was some serious table pounding going on today, Sparky, without a doubt.
Well, I'm not sorry, Mr.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah. Hey, Scott.
In terms of Trump's lawyer, so-called, being an observant Jew, I'm thinking, okay. Now, I think he said that he changed his mind. It's okay to have deals on the Sabbath. He just won't come. If he's that observant a Jew, it's ironic.
Getting a little lost already, aren't you?
That several lifetimes ago, a number of lifetimes ago, he would be picking up rocks and throwing them with great force at Trump for being such a goddamned reprobate. If he's that fucking observant.
That's why I said there's got to be something in there between polycotton blends and eating shrimp.
Well, you think? And I'm, believe me, I'm no, you know, authority on the Talmud or ancient religious law or any of that happy horse shit. But goddamn, if I can figure it out, pardon me, I didn't mean to jump in, but I just woke up. I've seen a bit of it today, but I heard a brief recap as the coffee was brewing, and I said, oh, boy, this is going to be fun. This is going to be, you know, I want the T-shirt and the souvenir program, and I just want it all to, you know, I want to let people know years from now, if we're still here years from now, that I.
Well, you're gonna completely upend your sleep schedule, Scott.
Yeah, I know. I know. I didn't plan it out. I should have worked up to a daytime schedule, and I, you know, that doesn't usually work for me. But anyway, go ahead with. It just kicks my ass around the block, you know. And
I guess they'll be starting at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow.
Here's the question. Yeah. Getting back to scriptural things, religious stories and stuff. What if tonight, in their sleep, the entire GOP Senate contingent, you know, slumbering away, all of them in unison, get a visit from Fat Dead Tony, the originalist, and he leads them out of the land of Egypt, that is to say, their blind obedience to Master Trump, and they all have a revelation in the night. A dream comes to them. It came to them in a dream, and they changed their wicked ways. Who am I kidding? Come on.
Oh, and just there are cattle dancing two by two, and yeah, right.
Yes, just tell me to shut up.
Yeah, man. And that poor stupid Bruce Castor talking about floodgates. I haven't heard so much talk about floods since Noah was building the ark. Tough crowd.
There you go. I had to mute because I haven't had my first cup of coffee, so I haven't probably made any sense at all.
What the hell kind of schedule you have, Scott?
Well, Sparky, you see, it's like this. Let me take off my jacket. I feel a fight coming on. No, I am a night person by nature. I've been a night person all my life, but there have been times when I've been forced to live in the land of the dweebs and the robots, okay? And I do it. You know, sometimes you'd be amazed the things that money will make you do sometimes. But I wiggle my way out of it. Now I'm not doing anything because I, you know, they pay me not to do anything. I reached the magic retirement age just in time for a goddamn pandemic. They say retire, save your money, retire, get yourself a nest egg, and then go do fun stuff after a lifetime of doing not so fun stuff. And what happens? I've reached the magic age. I'm about a year into it. And I can't do a goddamn thing. You know, I go out once a month, if I'm lucky, twice a month, you know, to pay the rent and maybe go down to the neighborhood grocery store if I need something that Amazon won't bring to me, you know? And I don't know how it is where Robin is. I mean, do you even have Amazon deliveries up there?
Yes, Scott.
You're lucky to get USPS. A couple of times a week.
I go down to Mr. Drucker's general store and pick up supplies in the settlements.
Oh, do you play checkers with the boys? Or how does that work now?
Mr. Drucker cheats.
Yeah. Golly, Mr. Ziffel. How's Arnold the pig doing? Do you see him much?
He wins most of the checker games. What are you talking about?
There you go. He's the Boris Spassky of checkerdom or something. I don't know. You guys go on. I gotta drink some more coffee. I'm not doing well.
you're doing just fine. My God.
My schedule is like midnight to 8 a.m. sleep time.
Yeah, that would be my 3 to 11 here.
Yeah, I'm. If you notice, I send you some late night stuff.
Yeah, I did. I was going to say, yes, Sparky's up tonight.
I always check the status of the moon.
That town hall.
Oh, yeah, that thing was... Are you talking about Lauren Bobblehead Boebert's town hall?
Yeah.
What's your favorite prison, honey?
When you get convicted to treason, what prison would you like to go to?
I think she'd probably have some fascinating conversations with the blind sheik and the Unabomber. But I tell you, one of the stories that I saw earlier today, as I was, you know, prepping and watching, you know, watching the thing going on at the same time. You know, we've talked for a while now about the idea that our treason problems run deeper than we knew or dared to think about. I mean, we've been fairly we've known that there was a bunch of white supremacy and white nationalists and fascists and shit in various elements of government and military. It turns out, as of today, we now know that a retired FBI, not an agent, not a special agent, a retired FBI section chief was among those arrested during the attack on, or as a result of, the attack on the Capitol. The guy's name is Thomas Edward Caldwell. 13 days after the insurrection, he was arrested. He got five counts against him for what he did in the attack on the Capitol. And guess what? He's a member of the Oath Keepers. FBI special agent swore an affidavit based on communications between Caldwell and other known and unknown Oath Keepers members. Caldwell appears to have a leadership role within the Oath Keepers. Hopefully, his FBI section chief pension will go the way of all flesh in fairly short order.
Now, what is a section chief like in the business world?
Middle management.
But still an important, I mean, they don't just let it, well, obviously they let just anybody do it. If this guy.
Well, the section,
there.
Let's put it this way. The section is above the individual field office.
Okay, and field offices are pretty vital in the FBI system.
So if you think in a retail basis, you know, you've got your individual retail store, then you've got your district manager, then you've got your regional manager. Well, this guy's a district manager.
Jeez.
He's a retired lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy, and he's had top secret clearance since 1979. He was a section chief for the FBI from 2009 to 2010 as a GS-12. He's done consulting work that was quite often classified for the United States government. He's done consulting private sector work for the DEA, Housing and Urban Development, the Coast Guard, U.S. Army Personnel Command. And those are all admissions by his lawyer. They're saying, he's not a member of the Oath Keepers. But it looks like, based on what the FBI has filed, that, oh, yes, he was. They're all over the place. We're swimming in them. The whole country. Every aspect of government, law enforcement, military has these dangerous, racist, fascist freaks in it.
Well, the entire country in terms of our government, you know, and I don't mean just federal. You've got your federal, you've got your state, you've got your county, you've got your municipalities all over the fucking place. You know, we're going to have to tent the country, like a termite man rolls up in the truck and the crew puts up that orange and white tent. You know?
Yeah.
And it's it's disheartening on some level. I mean, on
you
one
and
level.
you and I, Scott, are both people who are not prone to being at a loss for words.
Well, there you go.
Some of this stuff will actually defeat that. It's okay. It's okay to have to search for them because I've been warning about this for years, and here it is, Scott.
Yeah. Now here's my question. You've got this crew of Republicans. See, I think it, and I think we learned this from the Liz Cheney secret vote dynamic. And I know there's no provision in the conviction phase of the impeachment process for a secret vote. They've got to go on the record. The little light's got to light up next to their name, or however they do it in the Senate. But certainly there would be at least 17 GOP senators who know better and who have known better for a number of years, who knew better in their heart of hearts when Trump became the nominee in 2016, who knew better even the day he came down the fucking escalator. You know, this could be so easily remedied. And would there be a price to pay in terms of political futures or people saying nasty things about you? If you're so lily-livered that you can't take a few nasty things being said or thought about you, then you've got no fucking business being at the level of U.S. senator. This isn't to say that you must be a paragon of virtue and integrity. God knows we've seen them come and we've seen them.
Yeah,
go.
We're a little short okay. on those.
Yeah, you know, this is
you just
not
gotta the, have balls.
Yeah.
Those come in handy.
Fortitude, testicular fortitude for the more delicate among the listening audience today.
But curiously, Jesus. you're making an argument in the reverse, Scott, to what was made by I forget if it was lawyer Castor Oil or Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer, but it was being
now, there's a twosome. Jesus Christ!
That's what he's got, you know.
And they were only on the job for like 3 days.
Yeah, it was the car wreck guy from late night cable.
Think of yourself as
Matt Getz had his hand raised.
I would have paid good money, Sparky, to see Matt Getz mount this defense.
Think of yourself, Robin and Sparky, as trapeze artists, and it's a 3-person team. Okay. And the three of you have been working together for a long time, and one of the guys quits. And they put an ad in the paper, and they hire a new guy. Do you want, and you work without a net, do you want the third member, the newly arriving third member of your team, to be somebody who's only been on the job for 4 days?
Yeah, and his previous job was unpacking slabs of bacon?
Yeah, I'll...
Slickety.
I'll sell peanuts in the peanut gallery to the kids. I'll take off my tights, put on my peanut vendor uniform and hat, looking pretty snazzy too, and hawk them peanuts in the aisles. Jesus. Anyway, go ahead.
What I was simply going to say is that they made the argument. What are these members of the House and Senate afraid of? Why are they afraid of the American people? That was some straight-up table pounding. That's what I'm trying to get at.
And what's the old rule of thumb, as it were? When the law is on your side.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When you've got the law, pound on the law. When you've got the facts, pound on the facts. And we ain't got either one, pound on the table.
Let's hear what Megan has to say.
Yeah, I just saw her pop in. Hey, Megan, how are you?
I'm trying to figure out what the fuck I just watched on YouTube today. understand what the hell those two lawyers, and I work in a law office.
Oh, if you work, was it on at work where whoever lawyers are that you work for going, you believe this? And to think we work for a living.
Oh my God. It is just insane. I'm just, no.
I'm just not impressed with the caliber. I'm not impressed with the caliber of highfalutin Washington, D.C. lawyer in these days.
Yeah, apparently they're selling law degrees at 7-Eleven these days. Who knew?
Yeah, you know, you put your quarter in, you turn the knob, and out comes a law degree.
Oh, my God. I was trying to figure out if I was looking at the head of the lollipop gang, or, what did you say, Ben Castor Oil was
yeah,
his name?
Yeah, Bruce Castor Oil.
No, you missed the part where Ben Castor came out and said that Dems were threatened by Trump's political popularity and that they were trying to circumvent him in 2024.
Oh, no, I caught that. It is his machismo. They are threatened by his manliness.
What manliness? The only people I heard salivating over him were other Republican men.
Well,
they're
going to
call that straight?
Wait a minute. You earned that one.
Seriously. Oh, my God. The only people salivating over him are other Republican men, especially when he was wearing a mask. And then they're like, oh, Biden's defeated because Trump put on a mask for all of 10 minutes. I'm like, what the fuck? Man, that cult thing is a hell of a drug.
Oh, it is. It is.
Yeah. That's where we're at right now. Did you miss the part on Twitter where Trump said that if they wanted him to come in person and testify, they had to give him use of Air Force One and treat him like a former president?
No, I missed that. I'd like to see him serve him a subpoena and ask, and then watch him assert that, oh, yeah, we'll get you the organic diet your shaman likes too, pal. Stick your hands out now. We're going to put the bracelets on. See, they're pretty and shiny, Donnie. It was
I've got.
And
at what point do we need to yell Avengers Assemble? Because we got too many.
Hell, I'd settle for the Autobots at this point.
Oh my God. Now we got a couple of Hail Hydras high up in the FBI. What the hell is that about?
Hey, well, it appears. I mean, no, he's not an oath keeper. But I don't think the FBI generally doesn't go running off. I mean, Billable Rick could speak to this, but generally speaking, the FBI doesn't go running off to a U.S. district judge or a U.S. magistrate judge for an arrest warrant unless they've got the goods. But I mean, it's just chilling. And this thing now, I mean, from that I was talking about earlier, from Marjorie Taylor Greene to this clown in Michigan. And they're both saying the same thing. No, that was Democrats done. That's what that was.
What the hell?
The message, the point that I'm trying to get across, Megan, is that the messaging is now being coordinated. I mean, it's infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters. One of them's going to do Hamlet. Well, this is in effect two of those monkeys typing Hamlet, and one's in Michigan and one's in Georgia or D.C.
I'm almost afraid to watch the rest of it. Like, what's coming tomorrow?
Well, no, today was the really stupid arguments, and they're all going to be stupid arguments, but this was not the trial today. This was like pre-trial motions.
Oh God!
So I hope you don't have a lot of work that you've really got to get sunk into at work, Megan. Because it's going to
be playing in the background.
Yeah, this is going to be wacky for as long as, and I don't know how long it's going to go on. How long is it going to take the House managers to present all their evidence? I mean, goddamn. It's all there in black and white. And, you know, I feel bad for him, Megan, because they know they're beat going in. They're going to get, apparently, 55 votes, maybe. You know, they're going to pull up 12 short because there are not 12 decent human beings in the Senate. In the there is not a total of 17 decent Republicans in the Senate, in the Republican side of the Senate. That's just the bottom line.
I can't get past watching that video of it and then, you know, well, we can't convict them because the Republicans won't do it. And then all I'm going to hear is the harping from the other side about how we just need to move on and Democrats just wasted our time again. And, yeah, Republicans have to hurry up to block more, you know, COVID relief bills to help actual people. I'm like, Jesus, I just.
I know.
God. Yeah, like, let's hurry up and block more money and block more health care because that's what's important. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, that whole video was just chilling watching that. You're seeing literal beating of cops. There's one screaming because he's stuck in the doorway. The maggots are all coordinating. They're using shields as battering rams. They're trying to force their way in. They were spraying stuff at the. I'm just like, what? Yeah, let's just move on from that, folks. Do they really think we're just going to forget that in a hurry, especially since they're threatening to do this again? And I'd like to know, weren't the Republicans cowering in fear during that day, or were they just like, you know, were this attitude of they're only going to go after Democrats?
Well, I recall a chant. I don't know it perfectly word for word, but it was along the lines of, hang Mike Pence.
Oh, yeah, that was in the video they played. You could hear him yelling that.
So the likes of Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy aren't afraid that these goobers are going to come after them and rip them apart? Do they not understand how mobs work?
Well, nobody's going to accuse either of those people of being a giant of intellectual process. Oh, and as for how long it's going to take, okay, it'll take each side gets 16 hours to put on their case. So if the House managers get 8 hours tomorrow and 8 hours on Thursday, then it probably Friday and Saturday for the defense, or Friday and Monday for the defense.
Oh.
Or if they don't do any business at all and they just do nothing, but they're going to do business because it doesn't convene until noon tomorrow.
You know what's really sad? Something that you said a moment ago, Robin, about the House managers know going in that unless something really spectacular happens in terms of a cosmic shift in the consciousness of at least 17...
Over before it started.
Yeah, but the saddest thing about it is back when the Allies ended the war in Europe and got to the camps, you know, Auschwitz and the other concentration camps, they took the citizens in the surrounding area and marched them into the camp to see what had been done. And their feeble defense was, well, you know, we just had no idea all this was going on, okay? That was back in 1945. In 2021, you could have them have picnics on the Capitol grounds and show videos on big screens like at a concert until the cows come home, and it wouldn't touch or move the Trump supporters out there in the country. It wouldn't touch or move, you know, local Republicans who are of that bent, who are in office in various places and positions across the land. And it certainly wouldn't move or impress or touch the 17 senators. And there was just another one the other day who said, you know, I'm not going to be running again. Couldn't those guys hike up their big boy pants and step up and do the right thing?
No. I mean, we saw that with the last one, Lamar Alexander, who had been in the Senate since Ken Kanatas. he couldn't bring himself to do the right thing, and he was, you know, he was already, oh, I'm out of here. So I would say Richard Shelby in Alabama is no more likely to do so, because, God damn, he's got to go back home and live there, unless he just lives in D.C. And he's probably afraid of them hunting him down. They know what they've set loose, Scott. They know. They absolutely know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm living in a dream world, thinking that people see clearly and have a heart and a mind, and the notion of a profile in courage is not totally lost on them. And believe me, if this is what it's come to, I fear for the future of this country. If this is who we've got running the joint, then God help us. And by us, I mean us, a group of people, and you dot, S dot. Because if this is the dynamic going forward, then we are all screwed. Literally, I mean.
There's no small amount of truth in what you say.
And really, this is not the, you know how I am, the eternal optimist. This is not the eternal optimist speaking. This is somebody who's lived in this country for 66 years, who knows a few things, had seen them come and seen them go, who remembers Watergate, who remembers Kennedy being killed and King being killed and Bobby Kennedy being killed, and remembers the horror of the Vietnam War. Is it asking too much to do things the American way? And when did we change who and how we are as a country? When did the shift? Maybe it didn't happen suddenly. Maybe we've built up to it for the past 45 years or so. Probably likely we built up to it. It's like, you know, you put a little drop bit of poison in a glass over a period of time, and eventually it'll kill the person who's been drinking the milk with the poison in it over time. And maybe that's where we are. Maybe that's precisely where we are. And did we see it coming? Yeah, a lot of people were, you know, holding the lantern up and screaming at the top of their lungs where we were headed. And you had all the naysayers saying, oh, no, it'll never happen here. We're too great a nation. We're too strong a country.
Hey, our Scott, historically, it happened here and we didn't do anything.
Well, there you are. There you are.
This is I know people probably get tired of me saying it, but this is what happens from 150 years ago, letting people who overtly committed treason and got over 500,000 people killed, 400,000 of them Americans, and did nothing. Oh, well, you know, yeah. You'll have to do some paperwork if you want your citizenship back.
Jesus.
That's where it is. Hey, Roger, how was the tomato canning class?
Oh, it was pretty good. Didn't learn a whole hell of a lot of stuff, but I got to keep my continuing education hours in, which obviously those two attorneys today in the Senate chamber haven't done since they graduated from kindergarten. When I was watching that, my degree was in speech communication, and because of that, I did an awful lot with oral interpretation and expository and, in fact, debate. And if I had been opposed to them on debate, and I don't know whether the House managers got any rebuttal to them, but God, if I had been a judge in that debate, I would have kicked them out of the debate room for being off topic. And number two, I would have loved to have been a House manager running a debate flowchart on them and gotten up. And about a quarter of the time that they were talking, I could have blown goddamn near every one of their arguments right out of the goddamn ballpark.
Wait, you know, you raise an interesting point, because, and this goes to things we've said, like during the political pageants and whatnot, you know, the so-called debates. And that is this. They aren't debates. they have no resemblance to debates. They are, I don't know, somewhat structured arguments, perhaps?
Well, the presidential debates are nothing but give me a chance to speak my point, and I'm not even going to pay attention to what the other person's saying. But what I noticed today with those attorneys was there was one argument, and it had to do with there weren't any witnesses, there wasn't a trial, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, that's truly not what the House's job was. And then they come back and go, well, and they're using a judicial side on it, on the punishments, which they did admit to the fact that the punishment is only removal from office, which isn't quite true. But leaving that aside, if the result of the trial is not in that criminal civil case where there are judgments that can be made, why are you asking for the same rules of trial at the Senate? This is a political exercise. It's not a judicial exercise. So to bring up ex post facto and habeas corpus and I don't know what other garbage he threw into it as part of this trial, it has no bearing on this trial because it's not those rules.
No, that's why I said it was pure pettifogging. They weren't doing anything specifically.
And then they come up and say, well, this isn't valid because the Chief Justice isn't here. Well, who was the leader of the trial when they popped that secretary who was run through impeachment after he was no longer a secretary of something? Who ran that trial? I'm not the lawyer. I don't know. But it was just point after point after point that Trump's attorneys brought up that simply, to my mind, had no bearing whatsoever on the issue of whether or not the Senate can hold this hearing. And I'm sorry I missed out at the beginning of the program for that other thing I was on. But how did they end up today? Did they agree to go ahead with it?
Yeah, they held the vote, and it was 55 to 45. And so it is constitutional to try a president upon impeachment after he leaves office.
Now, the other one I would have thrown him out on in a debate sense was their argument about it's too late and you didn't send the papers over soon enough. The Democratic majority leader asked Mitch McConnell to reconvene the Senate before Trump was out of office. And Mitch McConnell wouldn't do it.
Right.
So, moot point. It's not the Democrats that prevented this trial from starting when he was president. It was the Republicans that did.
It's Republican favoritism at this point. It's Republican favoritism at this point. Mitch McConnell voted against the constitutionality of impeaching the president once he's out of office, but then voted against it when he was in office the year before. I wish they would just get up and admit they.
Yeah, well, and
Republicans are being held accountable, period.
Yeah, well, consistency is not required in that body, and neither do most of the rules that control a civil or a criminal trial. The Senate is the Senate, and the Senate gets to make it up as they go along because constitutionally they are allowed to establish their own damn rules. I mean, I know it's and I know you know this term, Roger. I know you, it's a reducto ad absurdum, but the Senate has the right, if they wish, to declare that gravity shall not be recognized in the Senate of the United States, and everyone gets to float around the chambers. They can do that.
Well, they've already agreed that climate change doesn't exist.
Right.
And the other one I would have hit him up on was this, and Mitch McConnell particularly, is you can't do a Supreme Court justice in the last year of a presidential campaign, I mean a presidential number, unless it's a Republican.
Right.
When we ended up with Amy Batshit Barrett in, what, eight days? Good God. And then he kept harping on about how the House was rushing the impeachment process, present tense, like it hadn't already happened. And I'm like, dude, the House just impeached him. Deal with it. Like, he didn't know what body he was even addressing. And then in the beginning, he was going on about the hallowed chambers and how great it was and all this legislation that took place there and how sad it was that we were cheapening the chambers. I said, but it's okay to let his Trump's maggot dope heads come in and literally shit and piss all over the hallways, but that's okay. Like, you think the chamber's so great, but it was all right for them to beat Capitol Police right there in the steps and go to the bathroom right there and threaten to kill members of Congress. It's like, that's all right with you folks? And that was right out of the gate.
So what's on schedule for tomorrow?
Tomorrow the actual trial begins. Tomorrow begins the House manager's 16 hours, and that's followed by the defense's 16 hours.
Are they planning on calling witnesses at all, or do we even need them at this point?
I don't think that's been decided yet.
Well, I mean, they have agreed to a set of rules for how this is going to happen. That happened a few days ago.
Yeah. Does it include witnesses?
I think that remains to be seen.
The last I heard was that there was this threat that if the Democrats called any witnesses, then the Republicans would stretch this out for 3 months and not do anything that Joe Biden wants done in continually calling witnesses.
How is that even a threat when they're planning on blocking everything he wants to move through Congress anyhow?
It's just more of that.
I mean, had to break the tie on getting COVID relief out to families because all 50 Republicans voted against it. Did I make that up? Was that a hallucinatory fever dream not too long ago?
What was that again?
I said, didn't Kamala Harris have to break the tie on voting for COVID relief in the Senate?
Yes, that was
long ago.
Yeah, that was late Friday night.
So how is that even a threat?
That was over the resolution. The name escapes me. Budget reconciliation to push.
Yeah,
that.
And see, Kamala Harris doesn't have a role in this. She could have, and I think, frankly, if you wanted to be absolutely true to the Constitution, she would be the one presiding over this trial. But the maggots would have a sad, and they'd say, oh, she's going to rig the trial, yada, yada, yada. Whereas now the complaint is that, you know, the presiding officer of the trial has already prejudged the case because Patrick Leahy.
The fact that your entire jury is contaminated by being a witness to the crime or the results of the crime that was committed, it's already a contaminated jury pool.
Sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a true jury.
Aha. Again, back to my point about the stupidity of the Republican attorneys. I guess you get what you pay for, and since Trump doesn't pay attorneys, but he doesn't need his attorneys because they're all so afraid of what's going to happen when they go back to their hometown. If they vote for impeachment and they go to old town hall meeting, it would be filled up with the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys, and they'd be afraid for their life.
Well, they're already gambling with their lives by playing around with this pandemic. And who was it that just died from it that was decrying that all schools needed to open immediately? And then
was that dude from Texas.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, cared all about the rights of the unborn, but not so much the rights of the postborn.
And MSNBC, while I was watching, pointed out that the I guess they were just taking the feed from B-SPAN or something. But anyhow, there was one senator without a face mask on. Guess who?
Was it Senator Leahy?
Where's a funny thing on his head?
Hell, Rand Paul, of course. Yes, naturally.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Well, he's already had it. He's immune for life, don't you understand?
Bullshit. Send him on a tour to South Africa for a day or two. That ought to be enough.
Ain't that the damn truth? But again, as I noted, there was a freshman senator. What's her name? Loomis or something? And she spent 30 minutes just sitting there flicking through paperwork. No mask. I guess maybe after 30 minutes, somebody noticed and made her put it on. The senator from Maggotstan is not in order. The senator from Maggotstan will put on her mask. Hey, that's a new word for this program. Maggotstan.
Maggotstan. I was going to call Trump Fuckistan.
Yeah, I thought.
Trying to make this country, but okay. Maggotstan works.
I thought Biden put out an executive order that you need to wear a mask inside all federal buildings.
Yep.
He did.
Supposed to.
He did. I don't know that applies to senators, and I don't know that that applies to the Senate. I don't know that federal government buildings is federal government buildings that are administered by the executive branch.
Yeah, it's that separation of powers and three branches business.
Isn't the Capitol's run by the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader of the Senate?
Yeah, precisely my point.
Yeah, but even if Nancy and Chucko were to decree in their U.S. Capitol in the House and Senate office buildings, they still would flaunt it. There's always going to be some. This may be my new motto. There's always going to be one asshole, you know.
Well, you know, you can get kind of Jesus-y over it. The assholes you have always with you.
Amen. Now take up the collection. Speaking of the collection, where are we in fundraising?
We started this evening at 520 to go. We are still at 520 to go.
Well, damn it. I'm not going to stand for that.
Have a seat, Scott. Have a seat.
Let's see that things are working out real nice when you have been walking around for 2 months. And there's a Christmas check that you haven't gotten around to cashing. So let's see what old Scotty Boy will do. Put me down, Robin, for 25.
Damn, Scott. Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you.
And there may be more coming. But I'm telling you, I know times are tough and we're up to our ass in stupidity. And poor Biden and poor Nancy and poor Chucko are trying to see our way through. They got their little legislative machetes, and they're whacking away at the weeds of stupidity. And we've got a ways to go before we get to the clearing. But each step along the way, we got to do a little something if we can. And that's my little something for the day. I'll as soon as their computer restarts, I'll zip it on to you electronically.
Well, rest assured, it is desperately and decidedly appreciated, and that gets us down to 495. So that means that we are we've got $105 of yesterday funded.
Go us!
Yay, you! So we'll call that progress. I appreciate it, Scott. I really do. Maybe some folks will jump in alongside you. I know how hard these times are. I know how hard they are.
I hope they do. It releases endorphins, by the way. You know, you do it for the good purpose on its own. But if you get a little buzz from it, I read a statistic today that when you're feeling sad or whatever, consider and recall that there are billions of cells in your body And their primary interest and purpose is taking care of you. You know? So in a case like that, you know, it's the little things. And in this case, the literal little things, you know? All these cells manage to work together day in and day out, week in and week out, to keep you upright and above ground. And that's not for nothing, folks. I mean, I'm not going to get cosmic on you, but on some basic level, just in terms of humanity, if we're not here for a purpose and to
why are we here?
Why the fuck are we here? And I know times are tough, and I know times are crazier than just spray roaches running around. But, you know, if we all do a little, it'll get done. So I'll end my speech there because I see Rick is here. Rick.
Oh, is Bill with us?
I see his name on the banner. Maybe it's just my device.
Oh, and Jeremy jumped in.
He's not on the call.
Well, Jeremy, okay.
Jeremy's,
I like Jeremy.
Yeah, hey, Jeremy, I missed you earlier. Thanks for jumping in. That's actually between Jessica and Jeremy and you, Scott, and Cecilia. That's, And so, we're down to 485. 485. I had a nice note from Jessica earlier saying a little something to get the show started, and that's perfect. So you mentioned something by email, Jeremy, about signage.
Yeah, I've seen a dramatic difference in some of the buildings I take care of in signage in the new administration. As before, it was kind of haphazardly put up, signs that were falling off their tape, handmade signs, disregarded. Now things are clearly marked, and even some things have been cordoned off, saying, like, one person this area at a time, no people. Some of my other buildings, I'm starting to see actual signs going up that no public bathrooms are blocked off, whereas for a long time, we'd be doing our work, and people would walk right past the stupid signs and say, hey, can I use this room, when it clearly says you can't, because we're fucking morons, without a mask on, in an enclosed space, in a public building.
Genius.
Yeah. So finally, I'm starting to see some of that change. I think it's mostly because of the new strains. And, I mean, I heard something pretty terrifying last night after you got off the air. I listened to, I think it was Shepard Smith over on C-SPAN. And he was talking about, it was one of the CDC directors saying that this whole, the numbers going down and looking good, could be a fucking mirage.
I think it'll prove to have been a mirage 2 weeks out from two weeks out from this past Super Bowl Sunday. We'll find out how much of a mirage it was.
Right, and when they start saying it could be, they're trying to take away the shock that it will be. They're warning you of something without freaking people out.
Exactly, exactly. And I just had a note from Shorty in L.A. And she said, you know, pay attention. California's Los Angeles's homegrown COVID-19 variant B1426, B.1.426. It was written about in the L.A. Times on January 23rd and hasn't been mentioned on the news anywhere since. And two independent research groups said they stumbled on it while they were looking for signs that the UK variant had shown up in California. But instead, they found an altogether new variant that apparently evolved and mutated in California itself. So that's a little terrifying. And thanks to Arthur, we're now down to 480. Thank you, Arthur, my friend. Thank you very kindly.
I bought me a new mask when I was at Target yesterday.
Is it fabulous?
A while back, the insurance company sent me a care package with, like, hand sanitizer, disposable masks, and all that stuff. And the disposable masks are okay. But I figured, you know, the other day they were talking about double masking. And I said, well, two of these disposables are not going to be all that much greater than one of these disposables. So I was in the bandage and ointment aisle of Target. And what I got was grab the box here. Can I give the brand name, I guess? Copper Compression.
Sure.
And it fits way better than the disposables. It goes further down, you know, chin ways and further up nose ways. And it's got copper in it. I don't know what that does. And it's got more, way more layers than the disposable. So I figure if I wear at least one or two disposables and then put the $9 mask over my face and only go out once or twice a month, I ought to be all right. I know not everybody can do that, but you got to do what you got to do, folks, you know? And did you see the fucking video a Super Bowl weekend?
Oh, yeah, there in Tampa.
Morons down, Jesus H. on a pogo. Who's the governor of Florida? Is Ron DeSantis still running, supposedly?
Yes,
running
Ron Monkey Up DeSantis.
Who in the fluorescent fuck decided that it's just, what the hell? It's just the spring is approaching. It's a lovely time to be alive.
Yeah, it's just a deadly pandemic. I mean, you know, so what?
What in the hell are people? Are people that stupid?
Yes.
I guess when you get liquored up, You
well, but it's all, yes, they are that stupid, Scott, but it's also a matter of willful stupidity.
You think?
Yeah, because people want, you know, they by God, I got a constitutional right to get sprayed down with silly string while I'm getting liquored up the night before the Super Bowl.
As true as that could ever be, though, Robin, in the context, given what we know about how viruses behave, and Shorty just sent us a fucking news flash here in the Golden State that we've got our own fucking variant, you know, and to the extent that we can do every possible thing that we can do to not give the virus a place to land and infect us and make us sick and or kill us.
A place to love and call home.
Letters, yeah, you know, to the extent that we can do all of those things, isn't that the epitome of freedom, life, liberty? You know, life is an important thing. If you're not alive, I don't care what your to-do list has on it. You're not going to get any of those fucking things done. Your honeydews are going to be buried in your vest pocket.
Well, it all stems from a filthy lie that has been promulgated by the libertarian and other aspects of the right wing, and that is that we are all rugged individuals. Well, we're not all rugged individuals. Far from it. We, as a species, could not have survived and evolved had we been rugged individuals. We are troop animals, pack animals, if you will. And the problem with being a pack animal or a troop animal is that it's really beneficial when you're working together for the common good. But when you get a bunch of pack animals all worked up and they cast reason to the four winds, well, that's how you get January 6th, Scott. You understand what I'm saying?
No. Oh, yeah.
But as for this lone wolf, we're all rugged individuals, it's crap. Because animals that exist as pack animals, when you are driven from the pack, you die. And that's why all this, you know, pick myself up by my own bootstraps garbage that the Republicans love to preach is actually antithetical to everything we are as a species.
Yeah, Robin, because they've got their AR-15s and 1,000 rounds of ammo.
Yeah, good luck when you need food. Because you can't eat that shit. And frankly, well, they're not that good for hunting.
I'm glad you brought up guns, okay? Because your guns are not going to help you at all in this scenario. Your guns are worthless. Melt them down and fashion them into something useful, okay? The self-reliance is all well and good, but it relies on context. And the context here is use your fucking self-reliance to be part of a solution, not part of a, you know, furtherance of the problem. And these people are not stupid, I don't think. Some of them are. Some of them are irretrievably stupid. But a lot of these folks are just being ornery. And that's perhaps too nice a word. They're being assholes is what they're being. We're back to the butt again. Well, I don't know. It just boggles the mind. And God damn, if I can get it, if I can see clearly what the deal is, I expect others, certainly those smarter than I, and certainly those not as gifted as I, at least in terms of vocabulary and being conceptual. I mean, if you see people dying, getting sick and dying around you, run the numbers, do the math, and figure it the fuck out, for Christ's sake. I got...
Well, that's the rational big primate brain way to approach it, Scott.
Well,
80% of the life that's ever existed on this planet has come and gone and was killed by things you can't fucking see with the human eye.
Well, plagues roared through ancient Athens. They roared through ancient Rome. They roared through medieval Europe and Asia and Africa. They roared, you know, sure. And nobody ever saw it.
Rick's here now. He's got his hand raised.
Oh, hey, Billable.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Pretty good. You're a little overmodulated, brother.
Oh, okay. Let's see here. Let me try to. Is that better?
Yeah, better, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've got I guess I'm talking through a speaker here. So, just doing some billable stuff. I got a possible new member of the firm who I interviewed via Zoom. So, had to do that while you guys were on the porch. I'll tell you, I didn't watch much of the proceedings today, but I definitely say the managers got the better of it. And I was trying to listen to the defense argument. And, I mean, who the fuck cares about Everett Dirksen? I mean, what relevance does that have to anything? And, you know, extraordinary people in the Senate and all that nonsense, you know? I mean, they were just filling time. They were wasting our time, Robin, you know?
Well, and again, this I've mentioned it several times so far, but it bears mentioning again. You know it. You heard it on day one of 1L.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the facts, pound on the facts. If you have the law, pound on the law. And if you have the if you have neither one, pound on the table.
Right.
All that Everett Dirksen shit, the Alfred Lord Tennyson poetry, that was all, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, that was all just table-pounding horse shit. Because they got nothing, and they know they don't have to have anything. That's why Bruce Castor Oil was able to stand there and hem and haw and just sort of make it up and wing it. I mean, Jesus, it was so bad, Billable, that even Alan Dershowitz said, God, that just really sucked.
Yeah, you know, what are they trying to do? I think he said something like that. I don't understand what they're doing. Something like that.
Dershowitz said, I have no idea what he's doing.
Right.
Well, what he was, and Alan's too highfalutin. I mentioned this earlier too. Alan's too highfalutin to recognize the Chewbacca defense when he sees it in front of his face.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Oh man, those guys are just. I mean, these guys are like such third-rate lawyers. I mean, it's amazing. You know?
Yeah, but these are fucking hot shots. Okay. The shown guy is Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, look, this is not a criminal case, though. their criminal defense attorneys, and they were talking about things like bills of attainder and, you know, criminal law concepts, which have nothing to do with, you know, an impeachment trial or a removal trial, I guess. You know, so it's like, you know, they're mixing, you know, apples and oranges. It just didn't make any sense, you know.
Isn't that the very essence of an obfuscation defense?
Absolutely. I mean, they did that with OJ, right? They used the Chewbacca defense for the OJ case.
These weren't apples and oranges. These were apples and dolphins. I mean, you know, let's separate it out as far as it should be.
Or apples and monkeys or whatever.
Kumquats and platypuses.
And I mind you, I didn't see it. I've got to watch the replay on C-SPAN or whatever. But if they've gotten to the point where they're invoking the name of Everett Dirksen, Christ.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were talking about...
Did any of them say, my learned opponent? Did any of them use
that? Yes, they did, actually.
Oh, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
Bruce Castor said, you know, the House manager's remarks were so well put together, we changed our strategy right damn in the middle of everything. That's why I'm rambling like this, because what I was going to read to you just doesn't fucking matter anymore.
Did Trump, you know, because the client has got to give some direction or at least have their wishes be known. Did Trump say, now, boys, here's what I want you to do. Get up there and you're 16 hours or whatever. You just overwhelm them with word salad. Just word salad.
Right.
Oh, and Jeremy's right. Jeremy said, hey, we all laughed at apples and dolphins. If that's not funny, what's worth it? What if that's not worth a cowbell? What is? So, yes, you're right. You're
thank
right.
Thank you. Here. Thank you.
And I need a little cultural help here, though, because Arnold just wrote in and said their arguments were like hot dogs and mayonnaise. I can't be the only human being that puts I can't be the only human being that puts mayonnaise on hot dogs. I just can't be.
Every now and then I do. I know I'm not proud of it, but I do.
You're not. That's what my base is on a bun or a piece of bread is mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, I ran out of mustard, so I had to use mayonnaise on my turkey sandwich. So there you go.
Well, you always put mustard on a turkey sandwich. Are you out? Are you out
He's
of your
on. Mustard?
On Robin.
Are you talking yellow mustard or the great poupon?
The
great pompoon or whatever it is.
Yeah, more like the pompoon, yeah.
Pompoon, yes, of course.
Pontoon. Give me a jar of that gray pontoon.
I'll tell you, I missed the first part of the presentation. I was out, got a little golf game in, and came 6 inches away from my third ace today.
You know, I think you're trifling with the laws of the universe, Bill. Kim with a note just said, "What the fuck?" Question: are fuckos lawyers on drugs, or they know it's a cooked jury? I think both.
Yeah.
Well, there was an element to Bruce Castor's presentation that had some air about it. Maybe a little horse trank. I don't know. But the jury is definitely cooked.
What I thought was interesting was that the House managers had their binder, and they were printed pages, and they were turning them over, and they were going through it like it was a well-organized presentation. And then up walked the defense crowd, and he walks up with his yellow pad, and is flipping pages over the top like he wasn't prepared.
No.
He wasn't.
And was just making up shit on the fly.
Exactly. I mean, when you have to start talking about a record that Everett Dirksen, recorded about his speeches, I mean, you know you're like,
Gallant Americans? They invoked gallant Americans?
Yes. Yeah, yes, gallant Americans, exactly.
Holy fuck, I bought that in the cutout bin.
Wait, I bought that in the cutout bin. It had a hole punch hole in the corner.
Yeah, it was right through Everett's. Well, never mind what it was through Everett's. But,
well, my now, since friend. They brought up Everett Dirksen, in my response, if I were one of the house managers, I would bring up the fact that it was Everett Dirksen that was recorded when LBJ called him up and talked to him about what Nixon was doing with treason, and Everett Dirksen said, I know. And that what we have here is a crime just as big as what Nixon did in committing treason over the Vietnam War. And they're the ones that brought up Dirksen. So obviously he's a good witness, I mean, you know, good source. And go ahead and use him.
You know, one thing that I did notice, though, and it's just because of who I am and how I was taught and trained and everything. We have, you know, we've got people, the house managers certainly are good in terms of their ability to put the argument together. But I'm getting the notion over the last 30 plus years that the idea of being able to present one's ideas when one is working orally, to be able to present those ideas in compelling fashion, that's just gone. There are no really great rhetoricians anymore. And rhetoric is not a bad word. But to be able to use the powers of the persuasive powers of voice and modulation.
I would go oration on that.
Okay.
Rather, as rhetorician, oration.
Hey, Robin, what did you think of Jonah Goose?
He wasn't bad. No, he wasn't bad.
I thought he did an excellent history lesson.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Their mastery of the subject matter is perfect. It's and you know, maybe it's a Senate thing, because there's not very many senators now who stand up and really bring the fire. You know, Robert Byrd is one of the last ones I remember who could really do it. And obviously he came from a far different generation. But to, you know, to really bring somebody to the edge of their seats, you know, that's, and Billable Rick, tell me, you've got much more recent experience than I ever had, and more than I ever had anyway. But when you're trying to convince somebody, you've got to get them to the edge of their seats, and you've also got to grab them by their hearts. You're never, it's awfully hard to win with an Apollonian argument when the other side is mounting a Dionysian defense, if you know what I mean. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And that's another thing we need your expertise on. Where, because I would expect you would know, having been an AUSA, where in the hierarchy of the FBI does a section chief reside? I don't mean like Pomona, but...
A section chief is like, you know, the FBI has various like sections, like you have the... major crime section, you know, kind of like the U.S. attorney's has. So it's just like it's mid-management, I'd say.
Okay, so that's the exact same term I used. Because we found out the FBI has executed an arrest warrant for participation in the January 6th attack on a former section chief of the FBI, retired.
Oh, my. Okay. Wow. That's
I mean, is that frightening?
Stupid for him to have done that. You know.
Well, I mean, it's stupid, but it's also it's also frightening. It means, I mean, the apparently the stupid bastard, although his lawyers deny it, the affidavit says that he was an oath keeper, and that he was a higher up in the oath keeper movement.
Wow. Well, he probably had some cred as like a former government guy. You know, they probably looked up to him and said, "Oh yeah, man, you were on the, you know, the dark side. Now you've joined the bright side, and geez, you know, you know your stuff, so we'll follow you." You know.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Steve, by the way.
Yeah, hi, Steve.
Hey, can you hear me okay? I don't have my microphone again.
No, you're good. You're good. You're okay.
Okay. Okay. You know what I think it is as Roger put it, oration? I think particularly with lawyers, so little legal practice is oral anymore. I mean, everything is on the papers.
Judgment on the pleadings.
Yeah. Perfect example is I've done appeals to the Second Circuit, and I probably couldn't tell you. I know one person. He's my law partner. I know one person who's actually ever argued, and I've been practicing for 17 years. I can tell you one person I know who's actually argued, had an oral argument at the Second Circuit. It just doesn't happen anymore, and I think that's part of the reason that the ability to articulate orally an argument is lost.
Should it stay lost, or does it have a place?
No, it absolutely has a place. Because look, here's the fact of the matter. The fact of the matter is this: some people digest information orally. Some people,
orally, A-U-A-R-A-L-L-Y.
Right. Some, and I'm probably more. It's interesting. I used to be much more orally, and much better to articulate something orally. But and it could very well be just for practicing all this time and doing. Having the mode of litigation be mostly writing, that I'm probably a little bit, I've probably evened out, but, you know, as a practical matter, you know, any oral arguments are rare. And not only that, and I never will forget we had an appellate advocacy professor. It was one of the writing classes that I took when I was in law school. And I think she was a lawyer in New Jersey. I hated her. I remember her actually saying to me, because I was in an oral an appellate competition. She says, "Your oral argument's very good," but she said, "In all honesty, you know, that's not where the argument's won. Your case, your appeal, and you know, largely." Even at the trial level, is not won by orally arguing something. And in fact, and you know, this goes to, and this may be unusual to New York or New York City, I don't know. At most, cases in New York City, 1% or less go to a jury. And in fact, I've met litigation partners who've never done a trial.
That's...
We have a Supreme Court judge who's never done a trial.
Yeah. So, I'm actually on as a corollary to what Roger just said, I'm actually of the opinion I think we need to have less lawyers, less judges as lawyers. Fewer, how do I say it? Fewer judges should come from the legal profession. Like, lawyers dominate that unnecessarily and wrongly. But I'm a weirdo that way.
Well,
probably realized.
I think we need more judges who actually come from litigation. You know, people who have actually
Ivy League professorships.
Right.
Right. Practitioners, not theoreticians.
Right. Meat and potatoes.
I'd like to riff here just a little bit on the
Roger
side of this. If you go back to the Lincoln-Douglas debates, they make some interesting reading. But back in those days, there would be people that would get up in front of the community and would speechify. And if you couldn't hold your audience, then you didn't keep them around for the punchline to get their vote. But as we've moved into media, and even in the early 50s, if there were a speechifying number, It would be on the radio, and people would sit around and listen to it. FDR did it with his fireside chats. But as we moved more and more into the television era, where there was a talking head that would only pull a snippet of your speechifying and then present their interpretation of it to the audience, and as we get further and further into bumper sticker memes, in which makes it so hard to try and discuss anything today, is everybody wants anything in a 20-second clip, so it'll make the 9 o'clock news, and they have their 28 minutes for advertisement and 2 minutes of news. The entire desire for somebody who can truly orate is gone.
Yeah, the market disappears.
It does not exist. And I think that's why there's just no need for any member of Congress, any member of Senate, to be an orator. I mean, even looking at the filibuster, it now is just a question on the floor. Oh, we don't have 60 votes. Piss on it. Nobody's going to get up and read the phone book or give a speech for 2 or 3 or 4 hours to try and sway somebody's opinion, because there's no opportunity to use that skill.
Didn't Ted Cruz literally read Green Eggs and Ham?
Oh, Jesus.
Yes, he did.
Was I tripping on that?
Scott. I was hoping that was a rumor. Oh, my God.
Scott. No, Scott, he was just showing off. That's what he was doing.
I will not eat them with a box.
Well, he probably held the books right side up instead of what Baby Bush did down in Florida, holding the book upside down for the photo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the what was the name of that book? The Goat's Pet
My President? Pet Goat.
It was My Pet Goat.
Yeah, it's My
Goat's
Pet Goat.
Pet President. Yeah, it was The Goat's Pet President, and I'll swear to you for my dog.
The goat Petting President.
Ooh. Or an A. But anyway, and Roger, you make a valid point. The fine art of speechifying, you know, is buried. You can leave flowers and say a few silent words if you want, but that art and gift is gone. Now, which went away first, the art of speechifying or the fact that nobody listens?
Most of the blame are short attention spans for that and our ability to retain information, but there you go.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with that. In terms of, I don't think we have short attention spans, and I don't think, and I don't think people have poor recall. We've just been, I mean, I can sit here and listen to people who might not be the brightest people in the world, but on things that I, you know, politics and whatever, but I will listen to people talk endlessly about baseball statistics and who struck out who and who had this many this and this many that, and watch people for hours and sit there and rapt attention watching the goddamn NBA draft.
Well, if they're interested in it.
But I'm saying, yeah. if you ask people to say, okay, that's great, but in the end, these are people you're never going to meet. They're not going to have any impact on your life. Why don't you spend that much time watching people talk about something that's going to impact you? And you know, the other thing, too, is the bottom line, and Robin and I have talked about this, and everyone's talked about this. We have never been a generally politically active country. It's always been a fairly active and rabid small set of the population, you know, and look at, you know, this last election, we had 62%, maybe 65 election.
I thought it was 70% max participation.
Okay. But in any event, in this country, 70%, even 65% is like, oh my God, the turnout was unbelievable. If you look at any other country around the world, in a European country, you know, putting aside the countries that have compulsory suffrage, 70% is a letdown.
Well, I blame the education system for that, Steve, because if we had serious education in civics where we taught them sense from right out of the gate, from kindergarten on up, this is how your government works, this is why you vote, and this is how it impacts your life, that might be a different story. And I firmly believe that.
Yeah, but Megan, now we live in a time where you can't trust the teachers to teach that, because then they'll say, and then there's Q.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. That's the problem.
The other side of it.
But I'm saying, if you had serious comprehensive education, if we were serious over a number of years where we said, you know what, since this is our form of government, it is our duty to teach them how this works, and this is who, this is why you vote, then you might see
somewhat Megan, different outcome, so. Perhaps. Yes, Megan, perhaps.
Yeah, a different
outcome. My wife and I were having a conversation about this a while back. Most of you know my wife's Peruvian. And people in Peru get seriously into elections, because when they shift, it seriously makes a difference to the entire society over which party it goes, because the parties are so far apart. In this country, the results of an election are much more subtle, and there are a whole lot of people, and I'm thinking now of the guy that worked as a plumber in a Kraft food factory. I mean, he had his job. He was going to have his job till he ended up to be 90 years old, unless he retired earlier. And it really didn't matter whether it was a Democrat or a Republican. His life was not going to change that much. And in this country, it really doesn't matter whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. The changes are much more philosophical. The drastic changes take a long time. We are still suffering from what Reagan did in the 1980s. Just the fact that he got elected, his 8 years really didn't change a whole lot of shit for the average Joe walking up and down the street. Yeah, it kind of fucked up the teachers because he cut the education budget in California before he became president, and he screwed up retirement, and he kind of fucked over the unions. But when he fucked over the
unions,
it took a long time for it.
And he killed a shitload of people who were suffering from what he killed a shitload of people, Roger, who were suffering from what we then called AIDS.
Yes, but the average person
right.
wasn't affected. And that's what I'm getting at. Yeah, he killed a lot of people with AIDS. Trump killed a lot of people with the COVID. But for the average person, generally speaking, it hasn't made a difference whether it's a Democrat or a Republican.
They say that doesn't have the effect on the average person, but I can tell you in the last 4 years, with the taxes alone, it has made a difference to the average person. And I sat there with my coworkers, and I worked in a manufacturing plant, and explained to them how it worked if you vote for the Republican, where the tax burden was going to shift. And yeah, that made a big damn difference. The problem is studied indifference, and they fake it doesn't affect them. That's the problem.
Point well taken. Point well taken.
Like, I seriously had to sit there and tell a manufacturing, a guy, 50s to 60s, old white guy who's worked his entire life, who was, pro-Republican, and I had to sit there and tell him, this was when President Obama and President Romney, it was that presidential election.
2012.
And I sit there and tell him, if Romney gets in office, that tax burden is going to shift to you because he's going to give tax breaks to the wealthy. And just that argument alone, I mean, just telling him that made a whole shift, because they're so ingrained in certain things, they literally believe if you give money to the rich, then they'll have jobs. And I sit there and tell them what they're going to do is pocket the cash, and they're going to shift your job overseas.
Well, it's this argument right now about, oh, my God, if we increase minimum wage $15 an hour, we're going to be paying $15 for a hamburger. But nobody ever says that when the CEO of McDonald's gets his pay increased from $3,000 an hour to $4,000 an hour, Doesn't that have an effect on the cost of the fucking hamburger? They don't see it.
Minimum wage is $14 an hour now in California.
And God only knows what that is compared to the actual, what an actual living wage is. You know, bless our little hearts. You know, we're back to the how we handle information again. And I'm so glad he changed the dynamic of the discussion to $15 an hour, Bernie. But the fact of the matter is, a living wage is still considerably more than that.
A $15 an hour wage gives you about $30,000 a year in round numbers.
Before taxes.
Now you can, and now you can kiss off about 30% of that between Social Security, income, and sales taxes. So that gives you somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 grand a year to, quote, live on, unquote. An apartment costs you about a grand a month. Now all of a sudden you're down to 8 grand to live on. And let's see, divide that eight twelfths. That's 3/4. That gives you $750 a month in round numbers to pay for your car, your gasoline, your groceries, and any entertainment. And that's less than $200 a week for to live on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was just
and so there, you know, and so there
may be off a little bit.
And so there was Joe Manchin arguing, no, y'all, we don't need no $15. No, he didn't do that. He, we don't need $15 an hour. We need 11. 11 would be better.
And that motherfucker's making $174,000. No, not Joe.
Off our tax dollars. Yep.
$174,000 a year. People telling me that I can live on that 30 is too much for me to live on. Give me a fucking break.
Yeah, it's insulting, it's infuriating. But you know, Arnold, just to
put Senator Joe Manchin on $11 an hour with what he does in the Senate, and watch how quickly he fucking changes his mind on that.
Yeah, that's what we need.
You got to take his house away from him and tell him to go find a fucking apartment in Washington, D.C. On his $11 an hour wage.
The same as what they were ridiculing AOC for doing when she first got into Congress.
Yeah, call it the $11 an hour project. Or Project 11. How's that?
There you go.
She couch surfed for the first month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Let me jump in here a minute.
Yeah, go, Steve.
Arguing over the cutoff. Yeah, how you doing, Megan?
Hey, babe.
Good to hear you, man. Arguing over the cutoff point was wrongheaded politics, too. What the hell was Joe thinking? You know how many voters you would have pissed off by doing that? He's in the 50th poorest state in the nation. Why the hell is he doing that kind of crap? Bob?
Robin?
Well, yeah, because there's an answer to that. Because he knows that any idea put forward by the Republicans would be, why do we have a minimum wage? So something is better than nothing, and it's the politics of shitty diminished expectations that this state runs on. I got to share something going back to something Steve in New York said. I had a note from Arnold saying, Steve's making a good point. The sports addicts make me fucking crazy. It's a laziness our society is burning. The same's true about protesting. People are terrified to come out of their life for one day and hold a sign for a cause they believe in. And you can't trust the government. Don't forget, that's a problem. The whole idea of the nine most... No, that's Trump again. Well, Mommy, the nine most dangerous words in the English language are... I'm from the government, and I'm here to help. And
why didn't that one hit
just wrapping up, Arnold says, it's not the government's fault. I'm not saying it that way. It's people being made to believe that the government is not theirs or them. It's not. People think of the government as a them, not a we. There's a reason it starts with we, the people of the United States.
Thank you. People forget that.
There you go.
The hand raising queue is got three
piling up. Yeah, let's go to Chris.
Hey guys, how are you doing today?
Hey Chris.
Good, Chris. You?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I just was wondering about Counselor Bruce Castor. Is he any relation to the plastic caster?
All this time you've waited to do that with you. Oh. No, first thought was castor oil.
And then the thing you were saying about the universe, right? What if, just ponder this, what if the universe threw us COVID just to stop Rick from sending aging rock stars off to their long home?
Hey, come on.
I've already said that. That's not fair. I've already picked on Rick for that. I had that before you.
Yeah. But and then as far as orators go, maybe one of my favorite ones of all time with the soapbox is Stud Circle for sure. That's all I had.
Go, Jeremy.
So is Joe Manchin's magic cut off before or after taxes? Because it makes a big fucking difference.
I think that's pre-tax.
So yeah, that makes a big difference because I make well more than that pre-tax. But once you take away the taxes, I make almost below what he's asking you to make.
It was pre-tax based on 2019 income tax forms.
Yeah, like I said, I make above that, but it's still a lot of money for even someone like me who makes $55,000 after taxes. It's still a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, it's the wrong, you know, 2019 is the wrong starting point in this age of COVID because, you know, most people's income did take a hit in 2020. So they should, you know, you should use the 2020 figure somehow. I know the problem is the tax returns haven't been filed yet. They're not due yet.
Rick, hang on just a second. The goddamn IRS knows goddamn good and well how much money everybody's going to do. You file your income tax, and you make an error on line 27A, and 6 months later you get a letter from the IRS saying you made a mistake on line 27A, and you owe us another $15.47.
Well,
they've got
really
that fucking data. Doctor.
You know, if you're self-employed, that doesn't really work because the IRS doesn't have information about how much money you made in your business in a given year.
Hang on. What percentage of the population files their taxes as self-employed?
I don't know. Probably 5%, 10% maybe?
Correct. So if we could go to the 2020, and if you're self-employed and have a problem with it, when you file your 2020 taxes, then you get your money, as I am going to have to do to get my $600, because they never sent me the fucking check. And I'm a retired person, very steady income, da-da-da-da-da-da, down the line, and they sent me the direct deposit the last time around, but not this time.
Right.
I have an idea. Well,
last time I got
I'm glad to hear the
check
only one
with my wife.
Direct deposit.
This time she got an EIP card. I haven't got shit.
I haven't gotten anything either.
I got nothing. My youngest boy, the marijuana farmer, he got a debit card, and I'm not sure what the oldest boy got. We haven't talked about it, but
you cut off, Roger.
Yeah.
Roger. I was saying that my youngest boy, he got the debit card. The oldest boy and his wife are both college professors, haven't been hit by this at all, and their commute costs have gone down because they're working remotely, and they're making enough money it doesn't matter.
I have an idea. Hello?
Yeah, go.
Hello? What is it?
Yeah, I'm sitting on the edge of my chair.
Why are we even worrying about, why are we even taking income into account?
So they know how much to get.
Why don't we do fuck that? Everyone should get $2,000 a month, period.
Even if you make six figures a year?
I don't care. Yes. Do what they did in Canada.
See, I'm with Steve on this for a very good reason.
Yeah, me too.
If you apply arbitrary cutoff lines, then invariably it becomes something for poor people that can be screwed with. I say treat it just like Social Security. If you're 65, you get Social Security, right?
No. I disagree with you on that one. I get $236 a month in Social Security. And that's working Social Security from the age of 18 till the age of 40.
You must have not paid in a bunch then.
Bullshit. I paid in every goddamn dime they wanted, including when I had to pay in on my self-employment income from my farm, paying the full 15%.
Well, okay, so I'm not talking about numbers, Roger. I'm talking about the fact that Social Security is payable to some degree to everybody who reaches Social Security retirement age. We don't
It doesn't have to do with apply. You need to look into two things called the WEP, which is known as the Windfall Elimination Provision, and the second one is known as the GPO, which is the Government Pension Offset. And that was a Ronald Reagan bullshit pull when he doubled the amount you paid into Social Security. Is anybody who had not yet reached the age of 55 in 1983 who switched from private sector employment where they paid into Social Security and shifted over to state employment when they created Social Security, any state who had a pension plan within the state that met or exceeded the Social Security numbers, the state employee or the local municipality employee did not have to pay into Social Security and the state-funded pension. They paid into one or the other. In the case of California, if you were a teacher, you were not allowed to pay into Social Security because then the state municipality would have had to match your contribution. So you were denied.
Okay.
So when I became a teacher in 1940,
that wasn't the issue here.
Let me see if I can find a better metaphor. Treat it like Medicare. You turn 65, you get Medicare.
I'll buy that one.
Okay, because the minute you make it that something that's for the others, then Republicans start screaming about how we need to cut your goddamn welfare.
Right.
And that's...
We're in a pandemic.
Yeah, we are.
And the other thing, too, is, and I'm not saying, I mean, I have a whole different view of taxes than a lot of folks in the community here, and people are probably not surprised about that. The other thing, too, is the fact of the matter is this. If people making another $2,000 a month don't need it, it's going to increase their income, and at least part of it's going to get clawed back on the other end. But we're worrying about the wallpaper when the house is burning down.
I agree.
Yeah. I totally agree. He's spot on.
Fuck the deficit. People got no money.
Yes.
People need money.
You know what? I listened to Sam Cedar say this today, and I disagree with him on a number of things, but he put it this way. He says, if four people get it who don't need it, take 10 people. If four of those people of those 10 who get it who don't need it to make sure that the six who do need it, then then do it.
And right.
I remember when Justin Trudeau, I watched the press conference where he talked about this. He said, look, we're not going to worry about people. We're not going to worry about fraud. We're not going to worry about that stuff until we're on the other side of this, because it doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter. I don't
get like, yeah, Jack in Shreveport has an interesting observation. He says $2,000 a month, period. Rather than means testing on the back end, it's more efficient to give everybody money with no big paperwork and take the money back from the rich on the front end using taxes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like Malloy says.
If you make over a certain amount of money.
It's like Malloy says. Nothing backs our own money. We print our own fucking money. What does it matter? We could be $14 trillion in the hole by our own rule book. It doesn't count.
Because this goes back to what I said last night, and there was a typographical issue. I said a country that prints its own damn money can't go bankrupt. That's why I head for the rafters every time I hear some goddamn Republican say, well, you know, if we give the poors any money, the new 90 states is going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, and along those lines, let me say something else, too. Let's just suppose we do this $2,000. The fact of the matter is this. There are a lot more people, probably by a factor of 10 maybe, who need this than the people who don't. And like Sam Cedar said, look, if a few people who don't need it get it so that the people who do get it, who cares? Who cares? Because there's an awful lot of people that are going – who could have comfortably paid their bills, who could have comfortably paid their rent, paid their utilities, gotten food. And so what if fucking Bill Gates gets another $2,000 a month? So what?
Well, Steve,
I agree.
I would suggest the problem with all this is not necessarily that they're investigating fraud and abuse. It's that they're penny pinching and picking and doing this little pedantic rule breaking, and we all know which party has to blame for that. You know, there are real cases.
Absolutely.
I get it. We're in a pandemic and we're in an emergency situation. I understand that argument. The problem is that you got one party who's enforcing this shit, and they're just running away with it because they're, you know, they have this belief that the poor is just going to bankrupt America and we can't support everyone, but they have no problem giving corporate welfare to billions of, you know, corporate tax shelters. You know, that's not bankrupting us. That's not fraud and abuse.
Do you remember last year, God help us, long about May or so, they finally decided to send $1,200 plus some other amount for each child in the family? And when they were arguing this, I wrote an email to both of my senators and to my representative. And I said, look, here's the deal. Try to convey this to your colleagues who are stubborn about this. I'm on Social Security. I get virtually all of my needs are attended to, and there's a little left over each month. Will $1,200 benefit me? Do I need it? No, I don't need it. But because I get Social Security, I know that my ongoing needs are taken care of. What will I do with that $1,200? I'll put it back into circulation because a wedge has been put into our economy by virtue of the effect of this pandemic. But these fuckers are just so short-sighted that they don't realize that, I mean, I'm fortunate that I'm on Social Security. Anything above that, I'll put back into the economy and send some to Robin. Okay.
Then you get, Scott, see, the problem is that you get these assholes who want to sit there and argue that, you know, Social Security shouldn't be a retirement plan and that's your responsibility and the government shouldn't bail you out. And I've heard this response in answer to stuff that happened in Ellicott City, Maryland, where floodwaters just absolutely decimated the area twice in 22 months. And instead of, you know, these idiots doing fuck all about climate change, which is what really caused this, all I could hear on the Washington Journal was how, oh, these people are depending on the government to bail them out and the government shouldn't bail them out. And I'm sitting here like, these are people that have lost their homes, their livelihoods, everything they own in floodwaters, which could happen to anyone. And the first ones out of their mouth is that, well, people are bitching at the government to bail them out when it should be their responsibility. I've heard this said in, you know, Medicare and Social Security and all this other mess, and I'm like, if that's your only response to people who are in need, you know, people who maybe can't work anymore or are disabled, instead of going, you know, begging on the street, receiving a monthly stipend so that they can be comfortable, it's just mind-boggling that that's their first response.
Well, here's the deal, though. There may be hope, despite the naysayers, because at this juncture of the narrative, shit is hitting the fan for these people's own political supporters, the ones who go out and vote for them every 2 or 4 or 6 years. And when it hits home for those people, they may sing a different tune. When the angel of death, you know, paints their doorstep or whatever that happened, the tune suddenly changes because they realize that, hey, Mr. John Smith and Mr. Ed Jones, that we've been voting for year in and year out, election in, election out, you haven't been doing shit for us. You've been making mouth music that we've happily agreed to, but the situation has changed, you know?
My question for you, Scott, is, and here's the problem, that you see these areas down south in particular where they voted Republican for, what, 40 years? And you see the states that the states are in terms of health care and education and life expectancy, and who are they blaming for all that? They're not blaming the people, thank you, or the immigrants, or people south of the border. Yeah. How do you get through to people like that when, you know, they're voting people in that are taking that shit away from them? And I know Robin has spent many a program time going on about this. But they turn around, they say, oh, no, it's the Mexican, I'm going to shoot them. This is how Trump got in office.
No,
they
wouldn't
sit there and say, well, they had grievances. Well, they had grievances, but it's not in the right place.
74 million people are going to be disenfranchised if y'all go forward with this trial. Oh, sit down and shut up. You know, no, I got no patience for that, because this grievance business, all of that stuff, Megan, there's that word again, obfuscatory ways of saying, damn, we hate them brown people.
That's my point, Robin. They're saying we hate brown people. They're misplacing their anger. Instead of being angry at the people they should be angry at and addressing it with them, that is legitimate. They're saying, oh, no, it's the libs. Oh, no, it's Nancy Pelosi.
Right,
Pelosi.
And you know, this is going to seem a little nutty. For me to bring this up, but I watched the documentary, How Do You Mend a Broken Heart? It's a documentary about the career of the Bee Gees. Okay. And they got to the point, you know, disco was huge and it sort of carried the Bee Gees along with it. And they were, wow, huge. And they didn't know that was coming. I mean, they were blown away by it. And then they were just as quickly, ostracized when a Chicago DJ named Steve Dahls declared he hated disco. And so one night at Comiskey Park in Chicago, and the people in the Chicago area, the greater Chicagoland area, who know this story, know it well. I remember Peter Godbold and some of his friends telling us about this over a decade ago here on this network. So they had a promotion at Comiskey Park. The White Sox weren't exactly drawing huge crowds. And they said, if you bring, we'll let anybody in on all you have to do is pay 78 cents for a ticket, but you have to bring a disco record. And then they had this thing. It was a Twinight doubleheader. And after the first game, they blew up disco records in the outfield at Comiskey Park. Well, it was such a disaster that people rushed the field, tore the shit out of the field. They canceled the second game. The White Sox were forced to forfeit it. And the thing is, what was supposed to be "I hate disco" turned out to be "I hate black music." Okay, because as one guy in the documentary says, they were bringing Isaac Hayes records. You know, they were bringing Sly and the Family Stone, for fuck's sake. They were bringing Earth, Wind, and Fire. They were bringing the Brothers Johnson. And it and what and all
called the Disco Demolition, Robin. Yeah, and the other problem was
Disco sucks.
Yeah, and they had nickel beer nights.
Yeah, but the bottom line was, Chris, it was a cheap way to do the same thing we see happening now. Well, you know, we don't want the wrong people to get this money. And what they mean by that is black and brown people.
Yeah,
and it's just like the disco thing in Chicago in 1978. It was an excuse to manifest big, wide, broad, deep racism and call it by a different name.
Slightly change the dog whistle tone, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because you know, if they'd had Klan uniforms and burning crosses, that probably would have been a big enough dog whistle that people would have figured out that this was an exercise in fucking racism.
Right. Wow.
And so all of a sudden, you know, that was the death of disco. But all disco was a phenomenon that began in the gay clubs. And it got so big, and people were having so damn much fun dancing that the straight people started going to the gay clubs. And then it exploded out of the gay clubs into the mainstream. And people were having fun dancing. And then, you know, you get Studio 54 and the stories of the excess and the cocaine and yada, yada, yada. But the bottom line was people were having fun, and the uptight white people said, we can't have this.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't the first time. I mean, remember anybody who groaned?
Me.
That was Duncan.
What's wrong, Duncan?
That's from my bar days where it was disco. I remember the damn disco bar at Doc's Cleary's Hilltop.
Yeah,
we went to dance.
Yeah,
and everybody go out to the parking lot. They hit a huge parking lot outside of it. And everybody go out in the parking lot and snorting lines, and then coming back.
It did happen. I'm told. I was a bit young, but yes, it did happen.
Well, in bell bottoms.
Oh my god!
Men in platform shoes.
Fucking polyester shirts.
Damn you, Scott, that was not polyester, that was Kiana, and mine had a pirate ship on it, so fuck you. I had leisure suits.
And there were radio stations that they changed their formats to disco.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great. I love disco. I don't care what anybody says.
It was fun.
That's if you're going to do housework, that's the music to have piping through the house.
It's snort a fistful of cocaine. Different.
Yeah, I heard a different story. Of disco music. I heard that it happened after Rick Dees, the DJ, came out with Disco Duck.
Disco Duck. Disco Duck was in this documentary too, and that was pointed to another death of because it went from being an organic thing to being a merchandisable, capitalizable, cultural event.
Right.
And wasn't there a parody of Rick Dees' parody?
Oh God, I hope not.
Rick Dees did Disco Duck, and then somebody did Disco Sucks.
I guess it could have stated Saturday Night Fever put disco on the map. One could argue that.
And so for anybody interested, it's on HBO Plus. It's a fascinating documentary, and in the end, it's freaking heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But it's those little cultural Easter eggs that I pick up along the way.
Yeah.
And
there's also a documentary about the Bee Gees. It might be the same one.
That is the documentary about the Bee Gees. How Do You Mend a Broken Heart?
Okay.
That's
a great documentary.
Yeah, it really, really is.
Well, didn't Saturday Night Live put John Travolta on the map?
No, Saturday Night Fever. Well, I mean, yeah, it was a big deal because here was this guy who'd played, you know, an idiot bum on an ABC sitcom, and suddenly he gets signed to a huge three-picture deal by Robert Stigwood.
Yeah.
And, you know, as they said, two out of those three movies were huge because they were Saturday Night Fever and Grease.
Oh, wow. You know, I actually had a double LP of Saturday Night Fever when I was a kid.
Oh, hell yeah. Who didn't?
Yeah.
You know, I had my Frampton Comes Alive. I had my Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. And the larger point though is that anytime you see something like that, if you scratch a little deeper, you'll find the fucking racism in it. Yeah, and in the case of disco, the homophobia too.
You're saying that there's racism in this country, Robin?
A little bit.
I actually had the Saturday Night Fever album, but I lost it at Comiskey Park. So there you go.
Really? You took it to Comiskey Park?
I didn't send that. No, no, no.
there we go. Kevin pointing out CB radio and disco, eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. We got to do what they say can't be done. We got a long way to go and a short time to get there. Yeah. And Darlene says, these politicos, Republicans and dinos like Joe Manchin, screaming fraud and abuse and squawking against those that might be financially better off getting more than they should from the relief package and so on, want to sink all ships so they can maintain the illusion of being conservative, are doing this because they're guilty of the very same damn things they're projecting, and that is what they are doing. An absolutely damn right cowbell for you, Darlene. Amen. And with that, I guess here endeth the lesson. So I've got some thank yous to send out because I went to the mailbox today. Thank you to Dave and the Blind. I already counted that in. Christine and the Blind. So that took us down a ways. Thank you to our pals, Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. And I'm so sorry. I can neither read your return address or your signature, but thank you to our dear friend in Colorado. So the bottom line is, we got things down to $370 bucks, which means $670 tomorrow, and that's huge, and that is a tremendous relief, and I thank you all very kindly. Thank you so very much indeed. And thanks to all of y'all for jumping in here. If you want to, we can say we can do a group discussion during the trial here, because tomorrow may be even far zanier than today, so we may wind up doing several front porches just because I don't want it just to be my analysis, such as it is, of what's going on. I always think that we benefit when we have multiple points of view here as to just exactly what we think we see. Because I see one thing, you see another, and we might get a better picture, you know, where the multiple visually challenged people trying to describe an elephant. I got the trunk. Somebody's got an ear. Somebody's got the tail, poor bastard. And, you know, it's a very different animal until you put it all together in the same place. So thanks, y'all. I got to take off now because I got to go down to the settlements for provisions because a nasty storm's supposed to hit tomorrow, and I just got told a little bit ago that we're out of freaking kerosene. So I got to go get that. Okay.
A little shorty. Tomorrow is Sir John Black's birthday. And everybody's going to go, who the hell is John Black? John Black is the man who was very involved in the British Leyland Motor Company, who was responsible for the Triumph cars and his birthday. And so tomorrow I may not be around because everybody's supposed to take their Triumph out for a drive tomorrow, take a picture, and post it on the World Wide Web through the Triumph Owners Association so that there is a picture of everybody driving their Triumph on Sir John Black's birthday. So
that's wonderful.
I'll catch you when I can, folks.
I understand, Roger.
A little errand to run.
I gotta ask you, what kind of Triumph you got?
Spitfire.
Oh.
1866.
See, the first car as a kid, as a rising teenager, first car I ever got a real case of the hot and bothereds for was the TR7. I thought that was the niftiest looking thing I'd ever seen.
Well, no, you're not ancient. You're newborn. But mine's a 1966 Triumph Spitfire that came out in 63. But I always wanted TR3, but the TR3 and 4 were the rich man's car. The Spitfire was the poor man's car, and so I have a Spitfire. I'll see if I can't fling a picture up tomorrow when I get back from the run.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
Anyhow, good night, everybody.
See you, Roger. See you, everybody. Thanks for jumping into the conversation. Hey, Robin, I really appreciate it. Yes, yes, yes.
One more thing. If Ace was listening, just keep the same link up. So anybody that's in the room now will get a Skype ring when we start the call tomorrow.
Oh, cool. That's excellent. It's a great idea. Thank you, Sparky. I'm pretty sure Asa did just hear that. So he'll give me a 10-4 good buddy if he did. So yeah, that's a great idea. Saves a little. That's a little bit of a labor saver, and that's a good thing to have. Thank you, Sparky. So let's see, wrapping things up here. Let me just check a couple of emails so I don't leave anybody out. As a disabled person, Dave in the Blind says, I have one thing to say. Conservatives want it both ways. They tell me to my face I'm not talking about you when they talk about being a drain on society. The so-called deserving poor. May Jean Calvin enjoy the rotten pineapple being shoved up his ass backwards by Satan himself. And then the Ironians in the Republican Party who are all family values forget that that Iran was against having families at all. I'm sorry. Sometimes Dave's speech-to-text thing is a little bit of a challenge. I'm not a deserving poor. I'm a disabled man who isn't able to get hired because of the prejudices of the able-bodied. God damn these people. And Mitch McConnell, that polio-ridden ass-lick, is a disgrace to disabled people everywhere. Your buddy Dave in the Blind. Brother John pointing out How Deep Is Your Love is one of the best songs. Oh, it is. God, that it's a word painting is what it is. And yes, thank you to our anonymous friend. I did go to the mailbox today, and I am in possession of a brand new case, and this will probably get us to like mid spring, I hope. Maybe into the early days of June. Nice case of TP, so I don't have to worry about a shortage of that here. And some brand new, fresh, and wonderful reading material. So that is much obliged and much appreciated as well. Thanks for the reminder to our anonymous friend. So, and by the way, Ralph sent me something along. Apparently, Nitwit Nero's lawyers are panicked. A link from Democratic Underground. Noting they were disorganized, but it's a theory. The Senate agreed to bifurcate the vote so people will vote twice instead of just once. And it has thrown them, apparently, into chaos, if I read this correctly. Whatever the excuse, those guys sucked. I mean, even Rachel Maddow pointed out, she said, ever have one of those nightmares where it's your time to talk and everybody's looking at you, but you haven't prepared anything? I used to have it all the time. It's called the actor's nightmare or the DJ's nightmare. The actor's nightmare is where you're going on stage, you don't know what the play is, you don't know your lines, and you're not ready. And as often as not, you're also naked. The DJ nightmare is very similar, only you don't have your weathercast in front of you. You don't have your PSA note cards. And no matter how hard you try to cue the record up, the record will not play. Well, anyway, Rachel Maddow said, I've had that nightmare a million times, but never once where the amount of time I had to tread water and I had to live and fail and flail was 4 hours. Because that's what these clowns did today. God, they were awful. It just horrible, horrible, horrible. I mean, what a clip, just to end on this.
You know, it's funny, this is an aside, but it's funny. You ever notice how when you're talking or you hear others talking about you when you're home in your state, they will say, you know, I talked to my senator or I talked to somebody on the staff of my senator. It's always my senator Why is it that we say my senator?
That's some really bad imitation, George Carlin, is what that is. Why do we say get on the plane? Fuck you. I don't want to get on the plane. I want to get in the plane. Hey, did you ever get high before you went on a flight? You can get on and get off, or get off and get on. Yeah, don't quit your day job. Actually, quit your day job, Bruce. You're bad. So, at any rate, we'll see where tomorrow finds us. Don't forget your popcorn. And thanks to every one of you, each and every one who of our subscribers, Patreon, PayPal, a la carte. Thank you so very much indeed. It's how we keep this all on the air. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky at the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Ace of HeadOn.live. Brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's just 40 minutes away. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live. Anytime, anywhere. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. John's working on our new intro for the program. Thank you, John. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Just keep getting well. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Please double mask, wash your hands, don't touch your face, wear your gloves if you can get them. Use hand sanitizer liberally. Keep your social distance. Remember, 15 feet between people wearing masks. And you don't want to be on, if you're on this side of the New River Gorge and somebody without a mask is on the other side, you need to go north, not south. And of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, if y'all go through with this trial, we're going to start a second civil war. Somebody says that to you, avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Off to get kerosene. Later, y'all.